You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
The special which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which almost befell a comedy community.
We don't have people testifying to Jesus. Like, our priest testified, but in court.
Everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of Comedia Gogo's podcast, Public Access. This is Jess.
This is Regan.
And we are happy campers to be talking about what today, Regan?
Okay, topic number one is, what is your favorite raw food? Topic number two is, what's something you know you're really good at but don't get enough credit for? And topic number three is, what is your biggest fear for the upcoming year?
Yes, and we are pleased as punch to welcome back one of our favorite guests, comedian extraordinaire. He's all the way here from up north in Texas, Mr. Aaron Iemper. Hello. How are you?
I'm so much better for being here.
Yeah.
I'm so much better for being in this spot. This feels like home.
Good.
That is awesome. Yeah.
I'm glad.
And this one goes out to Larry, who can't join us for this episode, but he'll be back next week, and we're going to be back doing this. We got some surprises for you, but we're going to rock it without Larry.
Without Larry. We don't need you, Larry.
We don't need you, and you
miss
you.
But
I had a really good conversation with him earlier today. That was like a 2 hour, whatever. So I already feel like he and I have had kind of our own podcast.
Okay, yes. All right.
Just without any microphones or anything like that. Right, so yeah. I feel like that spirit is still kind
okay,
of like
so
with
that's
me.
So done.
We're all here.
Care of.
We're all here.
All right.
We're all here.
Yeah. And he is here. He is watching.
He is watching us, and he'll be commenting live.
Yeah, he will be making comments. He just said, "I need you." So
well, I need you.
So we need you, Larry, as well, but not really because we're doing this without you. So I guess he can hear.
Can everyone see my shaving mishap?
No, I was going to ask you about that. I didn't know if that was.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if that was showing up. Did you notice that, Aaron, or were you just not being polite, not saying it the entire time?
I totally noticed it, but I didn't want to say anything.
No,
it was totally, I'm really curious.
I thought it might have been like a
intentional
hereditary thing that just it stopped growing.
If I may, just real quick, what happened was
Hold on, let's show the people.
Yeah, so 2017's off to a wonderful start. So I had this beard going on, and it's funny because me and Larry are casting.
By the way, the three of you guys. Like really bearded,
yeah.
It's just a beard.
It's always
bearded.
The season for
full on
beard.
It's winter time, so I got my hobo look right now going.
So I was trimming it up a little bit. I've been cast in an upcoming movie called The Last Delivery. It's going to be very exciting. I don't know how essential the beard was. However, I had a beard. They knew I had a beard, and I'm just like, well, let me trim it down just a little bit to get nice. And I had it to where I liked it. I have one of those beard trimmers that has the little plastic beard guard that had it to level 17 is what I was using. And so this little area, I was like, oh, I need to get a little bit more here. Let me get a little bit more here. But I didn't. It's in the morning before work, and I didn't realize that I had already collapsed the beard guard.
Ooh.
So I clapped, and I put it down. Oh, let me get this area real quick. And I picked it right back up, just muscle memory, clapping it down there. Oh, let me get this area real quick. And just lawnmowered my fucking face. And it was just like, it wasn't slow motion. It was
you
like.
You were really in the zone.
Yeah,
too, it took like, you a while
for us.
Yeah, I went, and then I just saw this clump, bit large clump of hair. I was like, man, that part must have been really thick to get this much hair.
Well,
and then
sucks.
I look, and I'm like, nope, that's my face hair in a big lawnmower patch, just straight up.
Yeah, that's. I'm sorry. My dad did the same
John
thing.
John Deered my face.
My dad did the same thing. He didn't know that you had to put a guard on a pair of hair clippers. He wanted to cut his own hair.
Oh, no.
So, he buzzed an entire chunk of his hair off.
He pranked himself.
He pranked himself. And I remember seeing him walking out of my parents' bedroom like ghost faced. He lost all the blood in his face. He had to shave the rest of his head for that entire summer and wear a baseball cap.
Right.
That's my dad.
So this was before work. And then I just like, well, and plus because I'm casting this movie, I'm like, oh, shit, I ruined my face. So
the moneymaker.
I need to ask them.
You ruined the moneymaker.
I need to consult with the producer and the director. Go, hey, I fucked up my face and we're shooting this weekend. What do you want me to do? So in the meantime, I have to like operate with this. is in the morning, and I didn't have time to fix it. So I went to work like this, and no problem, whatever. And then come home, have dinner with my wife, and hang out a little bit. And then I'm like, oh, shit, I got to go to the show tonight. And I hadn't shaved my face yet. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go operate in public with this some more. Also, because I still haven't talked with the guys. How do you want to settle this? And, but luckily, the shoot was postponed, and we're going to do it a couple of days, you know, weeks later. So all's well.
You just write in the script.
I had some just massive anxiety. I'm like, well, maybe the character... Right. It'll fit because he's kind of like a timid, like, loser. And this is what a loser does.
Yeah, you just
fucking sears his face off. Montgomery Ward's lawnmowers his face with just giant rant. Like, it's so ridiculous. But c'est la vie.
C'est la vie.
When does the shooting start?
Oh, it was supposed to be this weekend, Friday night. And through the weekend,
but
luckily, I was like, okay, well, we're gonna figure out some things. We just moved the dates, and so okay, cool. So I can grow some of it back. I'm very Homer Simpson.
Fill in, yeah,
yeah,
fill
exactly. In, yeah. But I'm gonna have to like number one the rest of my face.
Yeah. Oh wait.
Number one's your face. Yeah.
So speaking of politics,
to keep relevant to get keep that relevant crowd. That'll last. But yeah, number one my face.
Jess is all about number one-ing his face.
I'll number one majority of my face, but then I'll number two this part of my face.
Of course you will.
Oh, jeez. I usually get a four on my head.
No, but, okay,
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I have to number one this, but this has to be like a number
two.
17 or something. Oh, so, yeah. Anyways, I'm sorry to distract. I just wanted to know if it showed up. Because I didn't know all day. And of course, no one's going to say anything. And then Lisa didn't say anything.
The good news, it's on your, the underside of the beard. And right. So, yeah.
I looked at Lisa. I was like, did you see what happened to me? And she's looking at me like, what happened to you? She's looking at me up and down. Yeah, and I'm like,
she sees you every day.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I don't understand. I went right up to her. And I'm like, you don't see what happened to me.
Yeah. Okay.
And she's like, oh. I'm like, all right. And I told her. And
Larry said, Russian on the neck, German on the face. Is that what it's called now? Russian? A yellow Russian?
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
I like the yellow Russians. White Russian's a drink. Yellow Russian is getting peed on the neck.
Oh, okay.
No, that's not a thing. Oh, I just said that out loud.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. Anyway, sorry.
You going to hold that the entire show?
What? No. God,
okay.
No.
Okay.
I don't do that.
Yeah. I was just wondering.
My phone battery's going to go out. Yeah, we're just going to do the first few minutes.
Okay.
I don't even know how long. How long we've been on? This thing doesn't show
like
a
seven
time.
7 minutes.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, 7 minutes.
Cool.
So, Aaron, how have you been?
It's a very loaded question.
Yes. It's been a little over a year since we last chatted.
Yeah, I can't remember. No, lots happened. Performed tonight. That was
good. That was cool.
That was fun.
That was fun.
That felt good. So those shows are going to be fun. I met the headliner at the Laugh Fest. So that's what I was able to do this year. It was a couple of big shows, but Laugh Fest was in honor of Gilda Radner up in Grand Rapids. And so they do these huge shows. It's like a real festival, and they set you up nice, and they had Aaron Foley, who was the headliner tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know Paul Varghese from
Dallas? Yes, we had him on the show.
Paul, and then another friend that's from Seattle, lives in New York now, named Joe. And all of us, plus a couple of people I had just met, were doing these clean comedy shows for as part of the festival. So they had all different types of shows, different theater shows, big names, no names, you know, audience participation. But for the four shows that we had, those two nights or whatever it was we were there, those crowds came specifically for, you know, not safe, but cleanish, you know, shows. And I like to think of myself as kind of a, like, not a clean comic, but not a dirty comic either.
Yeah.
And both of us, both Aaron Foley and I think felt a certain tension during those shows where you knew you couldn't cut loose like you wanted to.
Yeah.
So even with the crowd that we had tonight, you know, as far as numbers go, it was so good. It was so cathartic to see the set that she'd probably want to do
and to do the set
that I'd want to do, you know. And a lot's been going on this year, too. So that's what I've been talking about a lot lately anyway. So I went through the whole thing with my father. It's been a while since I think I've talked to you guys about it.
Right.
I've been posting about it nonstop. Mm-hmm. Well, not nonstop, but my father ended up getting really, really sick last year and then passed away. So it was a very like comedy felt like it had been kind of put on hold.
Yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
know, mm-hmm. So there was a lot of months of just driving to his place and being with him and not really thinking much about getting on the road. But and then the few things that I started doing where I felt comfortable enough to like leave town were pretty interesting. I got to do my first show at like in New Jersey, got to
nice.
Do my first cruise. But yeah, I was talking about that on stage.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So I had never done that before, but that was like something that was like within, I don't know, a year and a half in the making of like trying to make that happen. Because it can be really, really good money, but it may not be, it may not satisfy your soul as an artist.
I can imagine it's pretty, it could get pretty tough out there. Like, so, especially you're talking about a dude who's out there for 41 weeks.
The guy, and it was super cool, right? But these are people who don't necessarily have, homes of their own.
I was going to say, you can't. If you're
they have stuff in storage, or they'll stay with their folks, or they'll stay, you know, wherever.
Right.
And then they're just out at sea. There are people who retire out. It was like a whole different world for me. It was a whole, like, meeting all these people who spend months out on the water.
Right.
And it's like, you realize that a lot of the people who are on a cruise, I don't know the numbers, but I would imagine, like, the majority of them, this may be, like, the one time they do it. You know, because they've always wanted to do it, and they want to go someplace fascinating. They want to go to Alaska. They want to go to the Mediterranean. They want to go to the Caribbean, and it must be amazing. You want to take all sorts of photos. This is your vacation. But then I would look around at the other people working, because the ship is also filled with, you know, bussers.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. And they are sick to death of looking at the blue ocean, because it's basically point A to point B to point A again, week after week after week. And I'm always fascinated by that. Like, something that the general public loves.
It's magical time for everybody else.
Oh, but like I was thinking about masseuses. Like, if you go get a massage and like the lights are low and the cosmic music is playing, the, you know, the really, really low key, whatever it's called, you know, just new age, whatever.
Yeah.
And you've got like a little bit of light and you get, and it's supposed to like relax you. It's like everybody's got a shitty day at work. Like, I want to know that masseuse, like, what's the most stressful day that they have in a situation like that?
I would like to think that they have to have, their senses have to be heightened, or their standards for massages have to be higher, because they know what they can do with their hands, and they obviously enjoy what they do. They enjoy the craft of, I would hope so. That they enjoy the craft of what they do.
There's got to be the angriest masseuse out there, though.
Yeah.
There's got to be.
Who's that guy?
Right? Who's the angriest? We need to find the angriest masseuse in the world.
I can't believe I got to do this bullshit again.
Like, you know,
I'm just so good at it, though. I don't
know anything else.
It's a calling.
I want to walk anything away.
Else.
But think about, like, other crafts. Like, think about, like chefs.
Yeah.
So, like, the whole chef thing, like, oh, I'm a chef. And then, like, but they enjoy food. They enjoy cooking food.
But that's also a high-stress situation.
Their taste of them going to some other place and then their expectations of what it is. So would that masseuse guy expect
But the thing is, when
darker atmosphere, more incense?
No, and that's the thing is it's like, how upset could he possibly be? One, you don't work with anybody, really, unless you have like Carol, who works up at the front and just always ruins all of your reservations.
Right.
Like, you're just working alone by yourself in hopefully an environment that you get to set. Like, you get to play the music you want, use the oil that you want.
Right, right.
But it's not like I'm a crazy massage guy, but like, when I find out somebody does that, like, I need to know. I'm like, who's the craziest, grossest person
you've ever touched?
Who's ever asked you to touch them?
Yeah.
And they have a story.
Yeah.
They will always have.
And then you also got to think about what is, like, what you think is gross. Like, all the gross things that you would think, oh, that'd be gross if blah. But then that's probably a normal thing.
Baseline.
Yeah.
Baseline.
Yeah.
Because, for example, and not even to be immature about it, but the reality is that if you're getting a massage and you're fully relaxed and your body's fully relaxed, there's got to be one out of two or maybe even three just farting.
Yeah.
So relaxed. And then, like, oh, and then they have to go, oh, I'm really sorry. Be embarrassed about it. But the masseuse's job is to be like, no,
that's nothing.
That's okay. Be relaxed. It's my, because I'm good.
Yeah. And it's natural.
Yeah.
That's your body releasing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Try that while getting the haircut. You're not going to get the same reaction.
Different story. Yeah. But once again, that's running. There's like a fart and that's nothing.
Yeah.
Once had a lady, you know,
whatever. Yeah. Go
crap herself, or, but at a good crap yourself, you know?
Yeah. That happens. You know?
It's like escalated from fart.
Yeah, right?
It's
like she, yeah, exactly.
I massaged her so well, or him, they crapped themselves.
Or, yeah, or like, a, I think what would be...
Really didn't expect this to be with the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Or hypersensitive, where the hypersensitivity of that person,
yeah,
if they're getting the touch, and that their senses are going way off the chart because they've never been touched like this before, and they just... Yeah. Sploosh or whatever, like that's gotta be. But to me, and again, someone's gonna be like, "Well, it always happens. Like it's okay," and they have to deal with that.
But it's like, to me, it's all the you're Snow White at Disney World, right?
Mm. Right.
You hate your life, but every child. No, I'm not saying that, or whoever. There's X person.
Yeah,
no.
That's a reality.
X person,
yeah,
at Disney World. A child sees you for the first time and you blow their mind. It's the most magical moment ever. And you do that hundreds of times a day,
yeah,
yet you hate your life.
I totally forgot about this. It's so funny until you brought that up. But I'll tell you about other things about the year, because it's also been, there's been a lot of TV appearances. Like, it's so funny what a shitty year it is, because it's like I'm focused on my dad, focused on the family. I'm like, oh, yeah, there were a couple of TV appearances. The album came out.
I was about to say, yeah, 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 about your album.
But it's like, it's so...
That's
so
crazy.
Back of mind, yeah, so whatever. But what you had brought up was, I'd gone to California a couple of times. I go to California every now and then, but my family's never been. So one of the things I wanted to do was bring them with me and kind of show them and, like, maybe plant the seed. Like, wouldn't it be cool if we kind of lived out here? Ooh, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's too late or what. Oh,
sorry.
But we decided to go to Disneyland, and I'd never been to Disneyland, and I was like super stoked about it, and I got stuck like pushing strollers, yeah, and all that stuff, and then my wife and my oldest would go off and do like the cool rides, and like the little one needs to nap, and you know whatever. It was
okay.
Still cool.
Okay.
But I vividly remember, all right, I'll take the little one back to the hotel. You guys have fun. He's knocked out. He's in his stroller. I have to somehow find a way of getting all the bags of stuff we have and the stroller and a sleeping child up into like the train.
Oh,
with me.
See, I don't even know there's
so
a
that
train.
We could take,
yeah,
the train to the front, and then I got to figure out how to get everything down, and he's still sleeping. I finally get everything set to the front of the park, right? And I've got the little one, and he's in the stroller, and I'm pushing it, and I see Ariel walking around, right? Towards
magical.
The front, just like you said.
Yeah.
And she's got like the red hair and she's got the blue gown because she can't be, you know, a,
yeah,
fish.
Okay.
Right?
She's out of the water.
She's Princess,
right.
Princess Ariel.
Right. And I saw the oldest, creepiest dude, like alone.
Okay.
Not like the dude with grandkids or, yeah, whatever, but he was like, Ariel! Ariel, picture! Ariel, picture! Whatever, like chasing her down, and she's got to be like, oh, okay.
I, you know, love, like,
poor girl. And that happens,
that was the
20
best,
times.
And that happens 20 times.
To,
yeah,
her.
Yeah.
Creepy, right, old dude just wanting a photo,
but
up.
Not even at, like, at, he's not, can I take a picture? It's just picture.
Picture.
Ariel. Ariel, picture.
Snow White, picture.
Yeah, picture.
Goofy's over there,
Goofy,
like,
Goofy, picture.
You can take a picture with me.
No, I just want princesses.
And Chippendales.
And Chippendales.
And Chippendales. All the other anthropomorphic animals, no, but the two squirrels.
Them Rescue Rangers.
The Rescue Rangers, he's got to take a picture with them.
You hear me? They're called Chippendale.
Yeah, but he calls them Chippendales. He's called, he, I know that.
The moment,
he calls them Chippendales, and it's only Chip. He calls Chip Chippendales.
The moment you say that, I'm picturing breakaway pants.
Yeah.
And giant.
It took me a second.
And giant rodents.
Ooh. That's out there, right?
But also, just keep in mind, it's just only one of them. And he calls Chippendales. It's one,
hey,
squirrel.
I think they're chipmunks. That's the chip part.
Yeah.
Okay.
We know that. That's what
I hear you.
And
I
he
hear
calls
you.
Blue the bear Tailspin.
Like, yeah. Hey, yo, Tailspin.
Hey, I want a picture of Tailspin.
Hey, trunk book.
So he's a Mexican dude, because, yeah, that's what we say Mexicans say in movies.
No,
hey,
but
check it out. It's Nightmare on M Street.
That's what.
Nightmare on M Street's over there.
That's a great realization that half of the Disneyland clientele transforms into like 12-year-old Mexicans that identify characters, but by the title of something else. Yeah, like I want to be dressed up as Halloween for Halloween, which means Michael Myers.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you seen the new Michael Myers? I'm gonna dress up as Halloween for Halloween.
Have you seen the new
Freddy Krueger? Oh man, it's badass. Nightmare on Elm Street, and it's badass in that one.
Larry said, "Did you know Tell spins on Robin Hood?" Oh, he is.
Yeah, he
right?
is.
Tell spin is on Robin Hood. Robin Hood. You better believe it.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is beautiful.
That's beautiful. I, by the way, appreciate your comment the other day about the James Hetfield thing.
Yes.
I had never heard that comparison before. I get so many different, like, the way I look.
Uh-huh. Right.
It depends on my weight, because my weight fluctuates a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's always like, I can know how heavy I am by who people compare me to.
Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah, like, hey, Oliver Platt, you remember? You know,
I go, all right.
And this was purely sound, and it was...
But I've heard in my skinnier days, heard like Ed Helms. One guy comes up to me and he goes, McLovin.
Oh, right.
He goes, no, man. Imagine McLovin, like, older, fatter, like, a little sadder. I'm sure you get that a lot, right? I'm like, no. I've never heard that. Thank you.
I'm going to fixate on that for the next year.
Right. So thank you for, you know, New Year's resolutions.
I was listening to WTF podcast, and James Hetfield, the lead singer of Metallica, was the guest on it. And I was like, oh, I got to listen to that because I'm a Metallica fan.
I listened to that, too, when it came out. It was really good.
And it was good. And I'm listening to it. I'm like, I know what James Hetfield sounds like. I mean, I know what he sounds like when he talks. And I'm listening to him. And there's a midpoint. And it was what he was talking about, really, that triggered it. I was like, he sounds like somebody. And then he's like, well, what are your kids? And he starts talking to his kids. Yeah, I got an 18-year-old and whatever. Oh, man, it's great. And the way, just right there, he's talking about his kids, and he kind of beamed up. I'm like, that sounds like Aaron. Like, it just sounded like the voice, the baritone of the voice. And
with
then
the
just
rasp. Whatever.
Yeah.
He's always got that rasp.
And then when he laughed, I'm like, hey, that guy sounds like Aaron. He's doing a really good Aaron Amper impersonation.
Well,
that's what James Hetfield does.
I'd like to think that Mr. Hetfield has my album.
Right.
And yeah. He's been working
right.
on those impressions. Because God knows I've been singing along to Metallica for years.
So it's just returning a little, favor.
Yeah,
right.
Tit for tat.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And Alan Arian Purge just commented.
Oh, see, Alan.
Oh, see?
You guys are friends now, which is always so funny to me.
I love him, yeah. Yeah.
It's always bizarre to me when worlds collide,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, you know, you post something online, and then, like, somebody from your comedy world says something to one of your old, like, ex-coworkers, you know? And, like, they get in a fight. I'm like, why do these
what's
people
happening? Know what's happening here?
Yeah.
This should not be happening.
But you and my brother have got some weird... Bond.
I super appreciate it, but he's messaged me just randomly. He's in like, can we be friends? And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, we are friends. There's no can, we are. It's gonna happen.
That dude, he has been living in Phoenix for years, and when our dad got sick, he dropped everything to come back to Texas, and he worked with at a place that he was able to transfer all of his stuff. So he was working from out of the house in Texas while our dad was in hospice care. So he only just now recently moved back out there after, you know, we're just taking care. We're still trying to take care of so much stuff. It's, but it's really cool.
He sounds like a very, very nice person.
He can be.
He also just said that you're his sister.
Okay. Okay.
So that's
my sister. Oh, I get it. You know what that is?
Oh, no, what?
It's a... I think he wrote earlier. He must have.
Oh, I just thought he's making it funny.
No, he's doing a dumb Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen song. I am the cute one. She's just my sister. That dude.
Oh,
Larry asked if you could just say whiskey in the jar. Whiskey in the jar. Oh, yeah. That's my bad James Hetfield impersonation.
Bad. That was amazing.
It was.
His voice is also a lot higher at times than mine, especially when you're listening to the music.
Right.
And it's like when I'm singing along, when I have to go up higher.
Right.
That always makes me feel bad about myself. Like it's like a low voice that can't sing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, do I have to actually get up higher to get to Johnny Cash? Why?
Oh wow.
Why?
Wow. Man.
or James Hetfield, or James Barry Hetfield. White, or
yeah,
you know, like,
yeah, yeah. Danny Trejo sang for Metallica.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, God. So the album that came out, that was another good thing to, for you to covet. Finally released your album, and then you left in what other people might have chopped out, but it's a drunk woman.
Man,
having some problems.
Yeah, I'm still pissed about that.
Yeah.
So, recorded the album, and there was a whole lot of angst about the recording. Like the date had moved. You know, set up with the record company. What we're going to do? I'm going over my set. What's the show I want to do? Mm-hmm. And then we record Friday night, and the shows were fine. I did two different shows, and I had an early show set and I had a late show set, and I was, the plan was to do the same set early Saturday, same set for the second one,
right?
You know, for the late show Saturday, that way I'd have a couple of different options, you know, for things. And Saturday night early should have been like the album. It should have been like hottest crowd, everybody's in there. And you realize, I realize that some people are really, really supportive. A lot of people just don't give a shit. They're at a comedy club on Saturday.
Oh yeah.
And even though there's stuff posted everywhere, even though, you know, Paul said, you know, our buddy Aaron's recording something, let's be on our best behavior. People don't listen to that stuff. It's my birthday.
Yep.
So there was a lady who had been talking the whole show already, hadn't been kicked out, hadn't been, you know, properly dealt with. And she kept saying over and over again about, I'm celebrating the such and such anniversary of my 30 something birthday. Like, shut up. Oh, and it was one of those things where she's just a couple of tables away from the stage where I couldn't tell if the rest of the audience was hearing everything that she was saying or if I was just fixated on it.
That's tough.
And the moment I lash out, there's going to be a whole bunch of other people like, what the hell is Aaron freaking out about? But it got really, really out of hand. And so I was trying to deal with her. I was trying to talk her down. And then while, you know, a joke got interrupted over and over again, and me finally trying to get my footing, that's when another lady in a totally different, you know, part of the audience gets up and tries to sneak out and go to the bathroom, and she trips and
face
plants.
That's not the same girl?
It's not the same lady.
Oh, man.
So now all of a sudden I got to deal with her, and while I'm dealing with her, that's when the first two ladies start piping up, and now I got to go back, and I'm like, it was a very tense moment.
Right.
But it led to, like, I think my very favorite moment, which was me saying, like, I dropped all the material and I was like, I hope you guys are having a good time because I'm fucking miserable up here. It was like the realest thing I could have said. But I mean, for the most part, it still was recorded great. It sounded great, you know, and I was really happy to have it go out there into the world. And Noah, what is he saying now?
He goes, is that Blood Cousins on the right? He's speaking in proper Mexican.
Jess. That's a great. Hey, listen,
Blood Cousins is on. No, you, Jess.
I'm Blood Cousins.
Hey, Blood Cousins. Hey. Say something.
Come see it. Check it out. It's badass.
Let's
try these snacks real quick.
Let's eat these Polly Poofers live on TV. Here. Someone open those. Okay. These are from Denmark. They're corn something.
So salty corn puffs with chocolate, milk chocolate.
Yeah. Over them. Sea salt. Eat them. Eat them live. Listen to it.
There's more chocolate than puff. Yeah. It is exactly what we talked about. It is a chocolate covered Cheeto.
Right?
Right on.
It is a chocolate covered Cheeto.
Poofar.
Poofar with no cheese.
That's interesting. All right. Not bad.
Those nuggets are so lucky.
Damn straight.
Put it inside.
Yeah, there's a lot of chocolate on these.
My brother has absolutely nothing going on a Thursday night.
This is the it spot.
This is it. Man.
This
what
is
are you
it.
Talking about? He's been waiting.
Yeah.
All right. That's not bad. We're chocolate.
Those nuggets are so lucky.
Is that the standard? That's the thing about my brother. Like, I don't mean when I talk about my brother, and I'm not trying to make fun of him or anything, but my default brother voice is, hey, when's your next show? Because be pretty badass. But that's not, he doesn't even sound like that. It just default, that's my voice for
my
him.
My brother would just piss me off by saying, just meet, like, I'd be like, shut up, man. You don't know what you're talking about. Shut up, man. You don't know what you're talking about.
The standard mockery.
And the standard big brother mockery, and there's no...
there's no retort to that. There's no smart retort. Like, as no, even though I was smarter than my brother, like, even though I'm 6 years younger than him, you, as smart as you are, and as you can't come back to, yeah, whatever you say, man. Like, there's nothing. He's like, shut up. You're an idiot.
You're an idiot.
Oh, man.
I'm an idiot.
Exactly. You're like, he's got me. He's got me again.
I do have a default voice, and I hate that. I'm sorry. And I know he hates it. But it's like, yeah, so I'm talking to my brother, and he's coming to me like, so why'd you have to leave me hanging like that? It's just a standard. It's either that or it's the Buffalo Bill voice.
Right, of course.
In my head, right. As he's talking, he's like, wait. You know, like that guy. You know, and you know, Buffalo Bill, I mean, he was a resourceful guy. Like, I'm not trying to diminish, you know, he's a guy with a head who had a plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he owned his own home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You know, right. He paid bills.
Yeah. You know, and
really good at home innovations, like renovations.
Renovations, right. Yeah. And, you know, pet lover, right?
Yeah.
You know, had a cute little dog.
And I think men into crafts actually is a lost art. Like, it's something that you really should be able to do, and you know, it's a part of the whole solving your own problems thing, like fix your own plumbing, and this guy can like sew fix a hole in his shirt. I can't do that.
Fasten a button,
right?
You need a guy like that. So I don't mean it as an insult, Alan, if you're listening.
Well, Larry and Alan both commented at the exact same time, was she a great big fat person? You guys should be friends, Larry and Alan. You guys are friends forever.
That's the default. How do you? Okay, let me do my Buffalo Bill. Like, that's the first.
That's your go-to.
That's how you get into the character. That's the first line.
That's like Larry with his Bucho voice.
Yeah.
What is the phone number?
What is the fucking number to the phone in my car?
But, oh, that's right. I totally forgot.
But when you do Bucho, that's the line you go to. But for Buffalo Bill, it's
Well, damn it. Now, I guess lucky enough, I don't remember that fart noise that we were talking about earlier. Oh, the do what?
See, there you go.
Do what? Maybe we'll talk about that later.
Okay. Oh, boy. All right. So we're going to be moving on to our first segments pretty soon. Aaron, thanks for coming on board and being with us.
All right. So what do we got today, Jess?
Hey, everybody. It's time for my segment of the evening. That segment that's called, yeah, I'm going to look into that. A segment where I talk about movies and games, and hopefully the enthusiastic reaction of friends and listeners would be to respond with, yeah, I'm going to look into that. So this week we're talking about the film upcoming in March called Raw. And Raw is a French-Belgian horror film by the director Julia Ducournau. Because I'm so fluent in French, I'm sorry if I butcher her name, but Julia Ducournau is a short film director, and this is her first feature. And Raw is the story about a young woman who is a virgin, and she is a lifelong vegetarian, and she was raised this way by loving parents, but her love for animals has driven her to the path of, I want to be a veterinarian. So she goes to this like veterinarian school. Now the turns for worse in the sense that it's a veterinary, it's like a college, and like colleges have hazing and weird rituals like to break people in, and part of that actually entails like one of the things is they douse the entire graduating class like in horse's blood, and they force feed like rabid kidneys.
Yeah,
and this really mean college frat type of stuff.
Because that's normal college stuff.
Right.
I would imagine if you're going to like a veterinary school, that would be even worse, right?
Yeah. I thought was very funny because it's a French-Belgian movie, and I'm kind of like, because that sounds like a funny premise, and you think about like, oh, that can't be how it is, but it brought the question of like, well, is that like in regular doctor school, do they do like, do they grow cadavers and they're like, oh, look at me. Like, is there goofy stuff like that, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you know. So, in this movie, Raw, this girl who's a lifelong vegetarian, she's getting doused with animal blood and they're just shoving like animal parts in her mouth. And what happens is she gets a taste for meat. This is the first time that she's ever chewed on flesh. And it goes south, and her taste for flesh kind of goes into a taste for the forbidden flesh, which is human flesh.
Ooh.
And it turns
that's the forbidden flesh?
Yeah, that's forbidden flesh. That and emu. Oh,
okay.
No, emu's pretty. You can buy emu.
You can get that at Fuddruckers, I think.
I think You can't.
Right?
I really feel like in all seriousness, you might be able to. I think you could get an emu burger. So no, it would be, what would be?
Like maybe like a shark steak no. or but even, what's the thing that killed you? Pufferfish.
Pufferfish? Meat? Pufferfish?
Poofarfish.
Poofarfish. Anyways, she gets a taste for that forbidden fruit that is human flesh, and it turns into a cannibal movie slash a body transformation movie because the effects of eating human flesh does bad things to the human body, as been documented in things I've read upon. And I was like, oh, wow.
The true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, when reading about cannibal movies, you read about real cannibalism just in your... you know, in my personal, like, oh, that's interesting, but real cannibalism has documented that it has weird,
like, give you the things. Runs and stuff like that.
I think it gives you rashes and it gives you all these weird things and the runs.
Okay. I think over time, I thought over, no, or is that just eating the brain? I'm not sure.
I recently read about this again because when we had Paul Verghese on our show, he brought the movie Bone Tomahawk with Kurt Russell, which is a movie about cannibals. And there's a horrible scene in there. And then I was like, oh, it was a cannibal. And funny enough, watching
Green Inferno
with Larry.
Have you seen Green Inferno? No,
don't watch it.
Yeah, okay. So another cannibal movie. And then I, again, read the same thing. Oh, that has bad effects on your body. So looking at what the story does is when it actually does something to her. Also, the fact that she's never eaten meat, I think probably
that's bad for the stomach, just in general.
The system does weird things.
When you go like vegetarian or vegan and you eat like a piece of meat, that's just bad.
Oh, yeah. So the hype... The film festival hype of the movie is that it's disgusting and gory, and one of the film festivals, people got woozy and fainted. It's that old gag like, oh, people can handle it.
You can't handle this movie. It's too intense,
it's too
man.
Intense. It's too nasty. But
it's too rough.
Yeah, exactly.
There it is. It's rough. But because it's a French-Belgian movie, they're going to market it like as hardcore, like this is going to be disgusting, and it'll be great to watch at the Draft House while you're eating... regular food for people.
Well, they'll
who
make
have
specialty dishes.
Yeah, they'll make.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. So that's coming out in March. Raw, eat it. That's not the tagline, but I just
that's
thought
not?
It's very classy. The poster is a woman with a bleeding nose. It's Raw, and I'm like, oh, it's very mysterious. What this is about? But if you really knew what it's about, it'd be like, oh, Raw, yeah, like
hit it Raw,
yeah, hit it Raw. But Raw it inspires the first topic for the evening, and the topic for tonight is what is your favorite raw food? And in the movie Raw, her favorite raw food is human meat, and not hopefully the case for any of our listeners or anything else. Hopefully not. But I'll kick it off, and my favorite...
Wait, okay, sorry.
Oh, so raw food, a lot of people think that necessarily means animal or...
Yeah,
you know,
not
whatever.
Cooked animal, right?
But it actually applies to tons of vegetables because right. vegetables are usually cooked.
Not cooked, awesome. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So that actually counts. Or nuts, raw nuts that aren't prepared. You know, there's all kinds of raw
slices
options.
Slices of watermelon.
Yeah.
It's technically raw.
It's technically right. raw. Exactly. But I'll kick it off and go with just a very, what I would think would be a common answer, and it would be sushi. I love raw fish. Raw fish, in like specifically fatty tuna, is the best cut of raw fish. And it's like depending on where, like, oh, like the place you go to and it's in season, and it's like, oh, I'll have a couple pieces of fatty tuna. And then I've seen anime where the joke is like, that's the king of sushi pieces. And it's like, oh, it's like this whole northern world. And I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, it's ridiculous. It's this weird, good flavor. It doesn't taste like what you think fish is, because people have an idea of, like, oh, fish has this fishy taste or whatever, and it's this, like, how does it taste like? Well, it's fish, but it's not fish. It isn't, like, briny, but it just melts.
So do you think you'd
it's
be...
It's crazy. I can't even describe what it's like. It's you'd like
be able, you'd be able to taste the difference. Like, if I gave you, like, four pieces, and you'd be like, this one's the fattiest and bestest one. Or, like, would you be able to tell? Because I don't know, like...
I'm not an expert in that, but for sure, fatty tuna over regular, like, regular tuna, for sure. Yeah, because regular tuna is very
tender. Is it like moist brisket versus lean brisket?
That's exactly a good... That is a perfect explanation of what it is.
All right.
You taste regular tuna, like a regular tuna roll, or tuna that's on top of, like, an actual sushi roll with all the stuff in it. It's very tender, and it has a bite to it. And, you know, it's very soft, and you tear into it. Fatty tuna, like almost like really good fatty tuna, just melts. It's just delicious cut of meat. It almost tastes like meat. That's the other thing too, is that it almost starts to get like meat territory, but it's a piece of fish. It's mysterious, and I can't fully describe what it tastes like. Would I be able to pull it out of a taste test? No.
Okay.
Because every place you go to, their cut of fatty tuna might be different than their places. So I may have had, that's the whole thing. All the sushi I've eaten might be total horseshit compared to.
Yeah, see, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not, I love meat, but I'm not a steak person to where I could be like, oh, this is a X steak and this is a Y steak.
Yeah, tell the difference between like a $20 and a $50 steak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would, I'd be like, this is delicious. But
right, exactly.
I like meat.
Do you even do the sushi like at the grocery store? Do you even dare to do? Okay.
Yeah, I do. But it's also looking at, oh, when did they pack this? They packed it today or yesterday. Okay.
But, you know, what you were talking about taste-wise, it's like, you know, when we've done that, we'd get like, you know, rolls or whatever it is at the store. Yeah. And then you go to an actual restaurant and like the big difference between like an everyday thing that you can get like in a small pack at the grocery store versus a real cut of something that's really prepared. And it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
When did every grocery store start having their own sushi chefs, by the way? Have you noticed?
Here's the thing. I can actually count that back. It's 2000, the first time I can remember it, 2006 or 2007.
Because it used to be so...
Or maybe even 2004, 2000.
It's in grocery stores. I can't.
Not commonplace, but there was an HEB, and it wasn't a super HEB. It was just an HEB. It's the for San Antonio people. It's the Randolph HEB, and they actually had a sushi people, you know, making the sushi, packing it up, and they did a really good job. Yeah. They were making it, and it was fresh. What makes it less fresh is when you wrap it in, you're pressing it because you're wrapping it in plastic and you're having a day later. But they would say, what do you want? They'd make it and wrap it in front of you and give it to you. They don't have that anymore everywhere at all the HEB stores, but that was a thing that was new. And that's got to be, okay, so now that I think about it, it's got to be 2004 because I saw that before I actually went to Japan. But sushi at Japan, it's crazy, like grocery store sushi at Japan looks like...
Oh yeah,
high end sushi here.
Documentary. The guy was that documentary. I forget the name, but
Hito Love Sushi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was doing that. What in the subway? Like where was his restaurant?
Was I don't it know. It was as big as this room we're in. It was tiny.
Yeah, exactly.
Tiny place, right?
Yeah.
Is that like four people, five people?
The grocery store thing to me says it's really hit mainstream. You know,
exactly. Yeah, see, absolutely. That's what I'm saying is like when it was in every grocery store. How many years ago?
Still, it's like when I was a kid, when we were kids, it was like somebody would talk about that. You're like, oh, I would never even try it.
It's a foreign thing.
Like, but like sushi in my head as a child was equivalent to the Temple of Doom scene. Where they're eating beetles, you know,
sure,
and I'm
absolutely.
How could you even try? And but it's amazing how different that is. I vividly remember speaking of, this was off, but the Christmas parties, my wife was working at a place that invited us to a big Christmas party years ago at a sushi place. It was the first time we had gone. And I realized that after a couple of bites and after some sake, I was like, I love this stuff.
Right. Yeah.
This is really good. And it became, our little one eats it.
Yeah, 4.5 years old. Isn't that weird? Yeah.
He eats it, and his favorite thing is edamame also. I know it's not sushi, but...
But still, that's essentially still like soy, lime whatever. Beans, yeah. But like, yeah.
And he'll chomp on that wherever.
Yeah.
So, you know, different world.
Yeah, exactly. But there's still people out there that would have that same perception of, oh, this is disgusting. We had, you mean my wife, it was a friend of hers. We were regulars at the restaurant we go to, and then we had a dinner with some of their friends, and one person... was just appalled.
Yeah.
The entire dinner. Like, I can't believe y'all are eating that. And she had, like, you know, chicken katsu, which is fried chicken. She's like, does that look safe?
Yeah.
But only ate the chicken, barely ate a little bit of that rice, but everything else on the plate was foreign, even though it was, like really basic stuff, like rice. Like, it was so funny.
It doesn't matter if you go to a Mexican restaurant. It doesn't matter if you go to a Middle Eastern restaurant. It doesn't matter. It's like, you're going to be able to find chicken, rice and vegetables, and a form of bread that is supposed to, you know, scoop it all up.
Yeah.
And people still freak out. Like, what is this? It's rice.
It's rice with chicken and a sauce.
Yeah. It'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Yeah. And chicken katsu sauce is essentially barbecue sauce.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. It's a taste away from barbecue sauce. Mm. And she just refused to dip it in that. It's like, it's barbecue sauce. Just dip it. You're gonna like it. Carrots. I'm sorry. That's what it is. It's carrots. They're pickled carrots.
Oh, okay.
On the plate. It's a very simple plate. Chicken, some pickled radishes and carrots. And no. Everything was just absolute foreign nightmare.
Well, it's funny. Speaking of carrots, that's my answer. In the fact that I was thinking, okay, what do I prefer raw as opposed to cooked?
Right. Okay.
Okay. So
that's a really good
You know, that's how I came into the question, right. Is what do I prefer? And so most everything, vegetables, oh my God, grilled vegetables, anything, even like a tomato. If you like grill a tomato, God, it's freaking tastes so much better. It's warm, it's saltier. It's amazing. But carrots, cooked carrots, I do not like.
Wow.
Especially
okay.
Boiled carrots are the grossest thing to me. They're mushy and I don't know. It's just when I have a carrot, I want it crunch. I want crisp. I want cold. Those are the three C's. That's some good alliteration right there. Crisp, crunch, and cold in my carrots.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The four C's. It's like a diamond.
Cut clarity. That's what I want in my carrot. I hope that the dude who runs produce departments and carrots talks about that and goes like, we treat our diamonds here at Henderson Farms like, we treat our carrots here at Henderson Farms like diamonds. They have the four C's. We have the four C's.
Yeah,
cold, crispy.
What the hell? What
cut kind and clarity. Of, it's actually the exact same. It's the same four C's.
The four C's of carrots.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah, carrots, dude. Cooked carrots are gross to me. So that's my mind went to what is gross to be cooked? Because you everything else, I mean, like raw other stuff raw is fine. Everything else is cooked, like meats, fish.
Right. Did you ever do the egg, like Rocky? I know it's not, it's salmonella, right?
Well, actually something that I've talked about before on the podcast is something that I just recently got into was like egg yolk runny. Like I've never, I grew up
doesn't
eating.
Doesn't that seem like an older dude thing to do?
Yeah, it is. Because I grew up with scrambled up until maybe, it was when I went to friggin' Asia and they served a uncooked, well, barely cooked egg on top of these noodles.
Like
I said, it was like putting butter over the noodles. Yeah. It was delicious. It was amazing. So
I tried an egg on a burger for the first time.
Yeah.
Running down.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, I like this now.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Now I can only eat at burger restaurants that have eggs on them.
No, I wean off because my hands smell like eggs because the yolk drips down.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that the Draft House they have, it's called the Breakfast Club. It's just a breakfast sandwich, with a fried egg on it, whatever. Yeah. But you can also, I think, for the option, you can Breakfast Club a burger or throw an egg on it. And I'm like, you're watching this movie in the dark, and I'm enjoying myself. And then I have a beard, and then I'm just kind of like, oh, my face just smells like egg now because I have runny egg on my fingers. Or like wipe my face off with a napkin.
You got a lot of issues with your face,
but
man.
Dude, no, my face is a nightmare. Between the beard,
what are you talking about?
Oh well, it's but it's not good for eggs.
That's not the moneymaker.
It's not the moneymaker.
No,
oh, it is
not the moneymaker. That's your moneymaker.
Oh, it is my moneymaker.
It's not a terrible place.
Oh well,
Aaron, what's your favorite raw food?
I was thinking sushi too. Carrots was a really really good.
That's
answer.
That's a good answer. Yeah.
I tried. Speaking of the restaurant, we were talking about earlier. I tried cooked watermelon for the first time.
Okay,
which was actually really really interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking. Like, just food-wise, dessert-wise, like, just cold, like, cuts of watermelon are, like, my absolute favorite thing. And I think of my dad a lot when we were growing up. I mean, he loved to just slice one of those things in half, and we would just cut them all up right there. And you almost had, like, a bowl, and we would all just kind of, like, go nuts, you know?
Yeah.
And when I met my wife, and I don't mean to, like, throw her, she was the first person I ever met who put salt
on the watermelon.
And I know people do it, but I remember that was one of those moments where, like, this makes no sense. And I don't know if there can be a future.
Exactly, yeah.
How can we be so fundamentally different about water? Watermelon is so delicious. Why would you need to add anything to it?
Right. Where do you stand on that now? Same?
I've grown to love her, and I've grown to tolerate.
Yeah,
but it's so stupid when you talk about watermelon. But when you see these guys get so bent out of shape about steak, like if you cook it past medium, if you have steak sauce, if you like, I used to wait tables and people would ask for like well done and ketchup. Like, why are you even here?
Why
do you eat this piece of, like, I remember having those kind of get the hell, there's something wrong with you. I'd have the exact same thing with like, what do you need to add to, if the watermelon is ripe and cut right, What do you need to ruin it for?
I think that's any people who love something like coffee people.
Yeah, coffee people.
If you put anything in your coffee, you're bastardizing. I remember I went to, when I was working for a grocery company shooting videos, we went to Houston to shoot a video at a place that roasted their own, and they'd have tastings every morning of all these different beans that came in from and they'd sip it, and they were like, they literally called it bastardizing your coffee if you put anything in it.
By the way, how funny is Erin Foley? She was talking about
They are those people to the max. So I can see anybody. Well, why are you even drinking coffee if you have to put cream and sugar? It's like you should be tasting the coffee. I think there's that version for many foods, probably.
Yeah. Right.
What's funny because
why are you putting pepperoni on your pizza?
I've always frowned.
Pizza should speak for itself.
I've always frowned on salt on watermelon. Always, I've always hated that. However, I never saw the hypocrisy, but when putting the chile.
Oh really?
Yeah, I didn't see the like. I of course still salt on watermelon. No, but chile on watermelon A+. You know.
What's the thing? I grew up with a buddy of mine who we went to the same school. His parents came from Mexico, and they used to make a snack for us that was is it jicama?
Yeah, mm-hmm,
yeah.
Okay, or carrot sticks or celery sticks, but mostly jicama. But I remember it was like lime juice and chili.
Yeah, that's the standard thing. Is that what it is? It's a Mexican fruit cup. Is you take the fruits, whatever it is, shitload of lime juice, and then the chile sauce was what.
It's like a chili powder. There's different versions. Like the straight chili powder, which is just like, it's just hot spice. But then they have like the Lucas or Trecha stuff, which is like spicy and kind of sweet. And I don't know. But
it's like a tamarind.
Dude, that kicks carrots up like 20 notches.
I haven't had that in forever. I may have to go buy some.
Absolutely. The Tajin is the brand of the chile. There's different kinds. There's like a sweeter one and a regular one. And yeah, like it's great. Like that's the thing. Any fruit, almost all fruit. Is you squeeze lime on it, you put that stuff on it, and it kicks it up.
Badass.
It's like, it is badass. It is very, 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 very cool. Are you digging up some tajin or something?
Oh, I thought I had some.
Oh, okay.
I thought I had some.
Oh, okay. So, what does the Facebook say?
Facebook answers. Judson Cooper says his favorite raw food is tomatoes with a little salt.
Yeah, that's red, so I can do that.
Sarah Sharp says fruits, berries, and sandia. Good old watermelon. Also, my mom was a celery and peanut butter mom, so I always have a place in my heart for raw celery. In fact, celery kind of grosses me out cooked. Ooh. Oh, no, I like celery cooked.
In a soup, yeah.
Yeah,
like stew or
yeah. Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm okay with carrot, yeah. She says it's a texture thing. Crystal Bailey says her favorite raw food is butter.
Raw butter.
Raw butter. Yeah. Andrew Thomas says a big old fat Granny Smith apple. Mm-hmm. Greg Forrest says raw footage. Free Ben Richards. Also tangerines. Athena says honeydew melons. I love large, juicy, succulent melons. Yes, you do.
I bet you do.
Honeydew. Carlos Castro, Pacific deep water shrimp ceviche. Yes, I can tell the difference.
That's really, really specific.
No, but ceviche. Ceviche is good.
Yeah.
Ceviche is another one, almost like sushi growing up. I'm like, that's gross. And then you eat good ceviche and you're like,
I guess I'm a grown up now.
Yeah. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Travis K says, salad is pretty much tops for me. Raw greens, fruits, nuts. Oh, so like a, yeah, I guess a good salad makes for a good, okay. Hashtag turd brown. Alfred Perez says, spam in the can. Yo.
Is raw, that, raw spam.
Wait, well, no, yeah. Larry commented, isn't that cooked?
Is
spam?
Spam is cooked. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's like, what did I always forget?
It's like a can of hot dog.
Right, hot dogs are
that's
cooked,
essentially what spam is,
like
a canned hot dog.
Sausages.
Yeah, those are cooked.
Point, now
they just, oh, God. Oh, God.
I don't remember eating them so much. I remember seeing it. So we must have eaten it. That used to be like a go-to snack for little kids at a daycare or whatever. But like I remember like little cans of the little sausage, Vienna sausages, and the gel, whatever it was, just like that.
Whoever had those. Well, because they come in the same. Well, old school fruit cups had the pullback tin thing on there, as did Vienna sausages. So I can. Maybe my brain's now is just fucking it up because now I'm just picturing some kid at lunch that had three cans, one of fruit, one of Vienna sausages, and one of just bean dip that he's stuck his fingers in. And I don't know. That's a fake memory. That's not true.
No, I've never eaten one of those. Larry Garza says carrots.
No,
me and Larry both love carrots. He says F ranch.
Yeah,
not ranch. Yeah, I don't want
to. Yeah, yeah,
ranch.
Yeah. It's one of those vegetables that you when you get the party tray. Yeah, I can just eat those without dipping that in anything.
No, I'll eat carrots.
Sure. Yeah.
Elizabeth Castro says Carlos Castro, if you know what I mean.
Ooh, yeah, that's a raw piece.
She likes getting likes some raw Carlos.
Yeah. Mm.
That's why they got them kids. Travis. Oh, never mind. Gabe Diaz says peaches and plums. All right.
Oh, okay.
Nico Cortez says almonds. All right. Right.
Raw almonds.
I mean, right. You can roast them, I guess.
Yeah. You could roast them, yeah, but just like straight up raw.
Rachel S. Norberg says mackerel sashimi.
Mm.
And Cody Hatter simply just says ass.
Raw ass. Eat it up. Mm. Well, speaking of raw ass. Speaking of raw ass, the film Raw, directed by Julia Ducournau, is a film that is coming out in March, and it looks very gory and disgusting for all you horror film fans or just gross out fans. Young vegetarian cannibal, virgin cannibal, who gets a taste of human forbidden fruit. Raw.
Wait, radar. You said forbidden fruit, not forbidden flesh.
The forbidden fruit that is
human
flesh.
What? Wait.
Raw, rated R, starts Fries in March sometime. Yeah, I'm looking at that.
Is that your movie phone man voice? That was pretty good.
Yeah. Raw, rated R.
You have selected Untamed Heart.
At the Santico Theater Embassy on Parenbital. So, Mr. Aaron, filling in for Larry and Larry's topic, Dad's Cornered, you have a topic for us today, don't you, good sir?
Yes, I do. And I was actually talking with Larry about it this very morning.
Oh,
so
nice.
This is
okay, awesome.
This is kind of a Larry approved
topic.
So, even though he's not here, but I talked about it briefly on stage tonight, but one of those things that's been really, really troubling this year is trying to regroup at home, trying to be the best dad ever, like not trying to waste any more time and trying to make sure that all the memories are good and trying to make sure that, you know, that I'm spending as much time with my kids as possible, right? And feeling like I'm doing everything in my power to be like the best dad ever. And it's still not being good enough. Do you know what I mean? Like everybody around you is like, oh, you must be a great dad, or oh, you know, you did a really good job with that, or all that. But then when your kids don't appreciate
I was going to say, this is not good enough to them, not to you. Like, you don't feel like you're not good enough.
I feel like I'm trying. These little bastards
don't
appreciate any of it.
Well, and once again, our audience, how old are they?
So my oldest just turned 12.
Yeah. All right. Okay. See that?
So sixth grade.
Yeah.
I'm already getting a touch of the moody teenager that he's going to become.
Yeah.
And I'm doing my absolute best to be patient, because I remember middle school being where everything all of a sudden felt wrong.
Yeah, it's like the worst.
It's like you went from being a kid and you went from not knowing things and you're like, okay, I guess I'm going to figure some stuff out, to being in middle school going, I really don't know things and everybody's giving me shit for not knowing what's going on. And it just gets kind of like worse later and later.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm trying to be sensitive to that. But then my little one, he's 4 years old now. He still can't go to bed on his own.
Yeah.
And what I like to do is whenever it's my turn, and we try to take turns, you know, take him upstairs, get him to bed, and then just make him go to bed and get back down so we can have some, you know, like time without him, to catch up on DVR, and it, there's been none of that, right? So my wife will go up there and complain that he's not going to sleep, and then she'll fall asleep or something, and then she won't come down for 2 hours. It's always this ordeal, and then I'll hear yelling, and he wants one more story, and she's not going to read it, and he wants to hear a song, or he wants to watch a video on YouTube, and she's like, no, no more of that, and it's always just chaos, right? Lovely, lovely mother-child chaos, right? When I go up, I'm like, I'm monitoring the time, making sure, all right, we're going to calculate. If I want him to bed and asleep at this time, means we need to be up there at this time. It means that he needs to take his like evening bath or shower at this time.
Yeah.
Means he needs his little snack at this time. And then when I go up there, I'll read him a story, you know, and I'll do the voices. Like, I've been working on this voiceover career on the side.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm like, dude, you've got a dad who can draw you almost anything that you want to draw,
man.
And you can
color.
You got a dad who will do voices for you when we do, and sound effects while we're reading books. And I will read you those two or three books and we'll have fun with it. Or we'll make up stories. I'll use my improv training and we'll do one-word stories together.
Okay.
And then he'll lay down and he'll close his eyes and he'll be nice and I'll come downstairs and we'll catch up on bullshit like Gotham or whatever we have recorded. And every single time, I'm like, hey, buddy, it's time for bed. Who do you want to take you, mom or dad? I want mommy. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
She didn't do any of this for you. Yeah. I know she doesn't. I'm right here, and I do a fantastic job. Why? Why won't you let me do this?
He's like, some of your characters, they just don't seem real.
It's really inauthentic. Like, you know, it's coming a little strong. You know,
I just don't really feel the motivation.
That British voice you did really sounded more like bad Welsh.
More of a southern, you know.
So my question is, this is something I know I'm good at.
Yeah.
I know... I know I'm the only one who appreciates.
Oh, man. Immediately, I start thinking of just, like, all the parents who are awesome. Because, like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's so many parents who are, like, very good at something, and their kids are like, yeah.
But it's because, and this is the other thing, they don't know any better.
Exactly.
This is their reality. Yeah. And so I think that a lot of my job as a father so far has been to heal my shitty childhood, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, well, I didn't get to go where I wanted to go, so we're going to go on that trip this year. I didn't get to, you know, get the toy that I wanted. I didn't get to live in the house that I wanted. I didn't get to play sports, so my kids are going to play sports.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get to do, like, all of this stuff, and now these kids have it. And I remember when I was growing up, we lived in a tiny, 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 tiny apartment, right? We moved around a lot, but for the last several years after my parents divorced, my brother and I shared a room.
Okay.
And, okay, you saw how he reacted with the, you know, Polly Poofars. Now imagine having to share bunk beds with that dude, right? Up until you have to leave for college.
Oh, man.
So my boys have their own room.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Each have their own room. And I hear complaints like, well, we're so alone. Oh, dear, why can't we? Like, I can't win.
Yeah.
I just can't
win. Yeah. Yeah.
So I know people feel this in their jobs. I know people feel like this in their relationships. But I guess the question is, what's that thing that you know that you're really good at, but you just don't get the credit for? You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's not like you want everybody in the world to think that you're an awesome dad, because anybody can fake it in public.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody can fake it online. That's all Facebook really is. Yep. Like, look at this photo of us doing this really cool family thing. Aren't I great?
Yeah.
And some people are like, oh, you must be a fun dad. I'm like, you don't hear the yelling.
Exactly.
And, you know, being a parent, I feel like, for me at least, has been like, maybe not every day, but every other day, oh, I failed. like I really messed that up, and I hope I haven't messed them up forever.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But, like, the only people who it should matter to are the boys.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, what kind of father you are. So I was looking at the comments that were coming in on Facebook, and there's some, like, really, really good, you know, like, answers. But then this is, like, the answer that that stuck out to me. If you ain't getting no credit from no one, then you ain't that good at it, sucker.
Who said that?
Someone named Ryan Timothy Brace.
Oh, RTV. Yay. Yeah, I love
nice
it.
Nice RTV.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Right? No, but, oh, man. That's got to be, man, I can't imagine.
So,
like,
for you, the answer is being a father.
Well, I think that being a father, like, trying to be the best father,
mm-hmm.
is a version of something that's caused me a lot of angst, where it's like, if there's a job to do, I want to do a really good job at it.
Right.
Yeah.
But then you don't get the recognition for it. Not necessarily that you're doing it for the recognition, but you want some sort of guidepost that you're doing the right thing.
I think that, sorry, continue.
But that applies to so many different jobs where it's like, I know that I'm handling this with more energy and, I think everybody thinks that they're, what's that, the Lake Wobegon effect, where everybody thinks they're a little bit better than average?
Yeah.
A lot of people think they're a lot better than average. But that idea that there's no way these people are giving half as much effort as I'm giving. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I bet every single person
thinks that exact same thought, unless you're a total, you know, dick who doesn't get up off the couch. You're like, yeah. I know I'm terrible.
Yeah, I know I'm terrible.
No, but I just, like, it's one of those things that I can imagine. You're doing it now. Maybe they don't appreciate it now, but like years later, because I think probably for all of us, right. We can all look back and go like, okay, you know what? They were pretty cool, or they did this, yeah. You know. And so even though maybe not right now, they might not appreciate it, but maybe later on, they'll look back and go like, dude, man,
that's but it's good. Also not to get all hokey or get to like that guy on the 700 Club, but that really creepy dude with the book. That idea that you might just be speaking different love languages.
Ooh, yeah.
And that's like the way I speak love is through
you're a gift giver.
Sir, like gift giving or time or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when
words
somebody,
of encouragement or words, damn it.
Yeah. But then when you're also dealing with a little kid.
Exactly.
And they're not dealing with logic and they've got all sorts of different things running through their heart and their brain.
They think Santa exists.
Right. You know, well, that's the other thing too. When you go through the holidays and you make every effort to make it the best Christmas ever, and you know that they got the gifts, and we know that we got these cool things planned, and we know we got fire for the fireplace, and we got a beautiful tree, and they're picking this out and picking that, and then they still argue, and they still whine, and they still bitch. That's me misinterpreting what they're doing as their reaction to my gift.
You did something wrong. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, well, I can't make him happy for nothing.
Yep.
You know? And I know that that's probably not what's going on at all. But at the same time, you can't help but feel like, well, I was talking about on stage too, getting to take them to the Cowboys game.
Right.
Where it's like, it's something that you really want to put some meaning into. And when they don't come back with any like real authentic, here's the story.
Yeah. Go.
I looked at my child and a friend of ours drove. So I'm sitting in the very, very back of this big SUV next to my little one. And I looked at him and like, I am so happy that we were able to go to a football game together, all together. Cause I've been wanting to come see these guys play since I was your age. And I was happy that we could all do this today. And I swear to God, I'm not making this up. And everybody asks me too, like these things that you put on Facebook, like, is that a real, I'm like, 98-99% exactly what happened. There might be like a little wording thing that I might, but he looked me right in the face, four years old, says, I wish we had one of those families without a daddy because you're allergic to cats. I said, I'm so happy we could go to the Cowboys game, and he basically told me he wished I was dead.
Yeah. How long had he been holding on to that sentence, though? Also, to me, it's like,
he'd been thinking about needing a pet cat for so long.
Exactly. Like he was just, the whole time he was at the football game going, man, I just wish we had cats.
I just wish we had cats. Like, this football is fun and all, but there's no cat. There's no
I'd
cat
trade it all for a cat.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I am allergic, so we're not getting him. Yeah. And I was like, I was moping about his reaction and my wife with no sensitivity whatsoever. She goes, oh, quit it. He didn't mean it. Plus, you're going to start getting shots.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh, okay.
This is happening. Good to know. It's good to know.
Oh, it's been laid out. That's the plan.
Yeah, that's a man. That is a fantastic reaction. Yeah, Jess, what is something?
This is actually some interesting perspective because the question is, like, what's something that you're good at that you don't get credit for? And for me, it's actually good, in my opinion, that you don't get credit for this, and that's film/video editing. Yep. Film video editing is what I do.
Absolutely.
That is
that's
my job.
The ultimate.
That is my job. That's what I do. And editing to me, like no one goes, oh, that's a good edit job.
Yep.
Right.
No one says that unless even like other people who are into filmmaking and video editing or whatever seldom go, that's got a good edit.
Yeah.
The whole
they'll say it'll be good light.
It looks good.
Sound.
Yeah. The sound is great, whatever. But no one goes,
shot
oh,
well.
It was cut well.
Yeah. Nobody. Yeah.
And the only time people do say things are cut well is when it's something frenetic and hyper and very commercial, like a music video.
Or the only time people notice it is when it's something like that or when it's bad.
Poorly edited. But when you edit something seamless, it's something that all film watchers, people who watch movies, they take super for granted because when the movie, you start a movie, you're swept into every element of it. It was the actors, the music, the cinematography, and, you know, the direction even then go because someone goes, oh, that's a good call to make that shot, make it this. And so editing is orchestrating all those, you know, all the performances from all these people into a seamless experience where no one goes, no one even thinks about someone put that together.
Right.
They just an automatic film watcher just goes, well, they put this movie together. Director put this together, and they don't even. It's not even the thousands or the hundreds of people that it takes to make a movie. All those are taken for granted. But I think, like, as terms as like one of the higher positions that gets taken for granted, is an editor.
Yeah, one of the biggest deal. Like, that's the one of the most major piece or parts of the filmmaking process is editing.
Right.
I think of the. The top four or five things that it takes to make a movie, that's like one of the main, that's the main one that nobody
And even when a director, because it's different, there's different experiences. There'll be a director that directs the entire film, like, you know, of course, all the actual actors and everything, but some, not all directors go to the edit room and sit with the editor and say, this is what I want. I mean, usually because it's a blueprint, it's been storyboarded, so it's like, okay, cut and paste, but there's beats, there's dramatic beats, whether you're doing a drama film, you know when to show, you know, this reaction, or if it's comedy, it's the timing. You like the best compliment I got was from our friend Jay Whitecott, and he's like, well, it's awesome when you guys make a video or a film or whatever. It's awesome that I can tell, like, your work because you're a comedian. I know what your comedy style is like, and I can see that comedy style in the movies that y'all edit because you have the same beats in your timing of your comedy stylings is in the visual thing that you do. So to me, I like the fact that I feel that I'm pretty good at my job. I'm pretty competent and that I don't get credit for it because that means it was a seamless experience that no one thought of.
So it makes me think of Futurama. There's an episode where Bender goes flying out into space and he becomes a god.
There's a little
civilization that grows on him, and everything he tries to do turns into something wrong.
And it's
totally what's coming to my mind now as we're talking about this. And then the thing that one of the lines that was like when he meets a version of God. Do you remember this?
He
goes, "If you've done your job right, it'll look like nothing happened at all, or no one's done anything at all." And that's exactly what you're talking about. Where it's like, if you've, and it's not just editing, but it's also stand-up comedy.
Right.
It's like the fact that the illusion is that somebody got on stage and that they're just riffing or they're talking off the top of their head. That's the ultimate in a lot of work, a lot of preparation, a lot of thinking went into writing this out, trying different things, experimenting, putting it this way, putting it that way.
Right.
And when somebody can say, oh man, it just looks like y'all are riffing, that's exactly what that is.
Where
it's just like, you don't, that's the tip of the iceberg. There was all this other stuff that went into seeing, that's almost every project.
That mentality can be applied to all kinds of jobs and positions. But to me, like, that's like, it, for me, when I think about it, no one ever comes, like, it's, I'm not waiting for that credit where people go, oh, that was a good editing job. I almost don't want that. I would rather people not question.
It has to be invisible.
Yeah. And I'd rather question just like, it's done. Y'all,
you might be looking for it, but there are oftentimes I'm watching a movie and you might have to go back and like rewind. You're like, was that all one continuous shot? That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Or there's a special effect. You're like, that really, as dumb as it is or old, but the original Ben-Hur, not the original, but, you know, whatever the Charlton Heston was, where, like, there's a guy getting run over by a chariot of horses. Right. You're watching, oh, my God, somebody really got hit. You have to stop and look, and you're like, that's where they put the cut. That's where okay. You know what I mean? But it's like, at the time, you're really, really sucked in, and that's that job.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
That is the beauty of it. And that's the thing, too, is that it also depends on the project. Our projects... Like, because we're also directing it, I know ahead of time going in, I know what challenges we have. Like, oh, we didn't get this or we missed that. So I know ahead of time, I'm like, okay, I need to look forward to whatever. Or if there's a few riffs where I have to pick the best out of multiple things, make the call of going, which is the best one out of all the great things. And that's the thing, when the thing's over and people like don't say anything, I'm like, phew, because they don't know that.
Dude, that,
all the problems that entailed with this particular situation, the shoot, you know, our movie in particular, like, there's a big thing that, like, it's still, like, I've seen it lots of times we put it together, but a big thing, we've even mentioned the podcast, is that Regan lost a chunk of weight. We shot the majority of the movie, like 75% of the movie at a particular time, and then we had still stuff to shoot, and a year passes by, and Regan loses... so much weight, but it's a very important cutaway shot, at the end, and we just had to let go. I had to stretch him out a little bit on video and stretch him, make him look a little bit thicker, but it's still Thinner Regan who gets up.
It's...
And seeing it on
glaringly
screen,
obvious,
and I'm just
if you
like,
know.
No, there it is. It's Fat Regan, Skinny Regan, Fat Regan. I'm like, and then people
don't catch
don't
it.
Catch
it
him.
Is unbelievable.
And it's like one of those things. I'm like, oh, phew. Like, because that means that the story at that particular moment, which is like, again, it's very pivotal that they're engaged in the story and not catching all the gaffes and all the problems. So.
And luckily also the brain has something to do with that. And the fact that when your brain has been trained the entire movie to recognize that,
right.
It just, it goes, that's what Regan looks like. That's what
it
Regan
fills
when
in the fat. It fills it
in. And that happens with movies all the time where, oh, they had to shoot this thing.
Yep.
And it'll be something like, oh, that's the hair's gone. They're wearing a wig.
Aside from my weight, Joel's hair in
Joel's
that
hair in that movie jumps all over the place.
Fluctuates like crazy. Yeah. But you don't notice.
It was the story Rosie O'Donnell would tell about that horrible Exit to Eden movie.
Oh.
They had to do reshoots where she had lost weight and then she didn't lose weight. And then having to, and I know it's really terrible to bring up Rosie O'Donnell in like, dominatrix leather whatever.
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Oh
yeah. Anyway,
yeah,
but she used to tell that story about like, we need to do some reshoots, are you okay? And she's like, hell no.
Yeah,
like,
no. We were, when you said that's a wrap, that was a wrap. Like, that's
I
done.
Went to the craft service table. Yeah. And it was a party.
Yeah,
I'm done.
right
yeah.
Eating
You don't get no credit.
No artistic value to that. Here's the bad thing is that It's also, what sucks about it is it's something you shouldn't be proud of, especially
of course, but
like
still,
especially something like, well, you know,
are you talking about eating well? Or are you
no,
talking about
no, like eating a ton of food? Like oh, okay. I am good at it,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
I am good at it.
Like hot dog champion.
Like, and see, that's the thing. I've never put myself to the test. That's one of the things. So I guess I don't deserve the credit because I've never stepped up to the plate. But at the same time, as someone who's struggled with weight, It's a shameful thing to be able to eat that much. It's not something that I want to boast about all the time or want credit. In fact, oftentimes at a buffet, I have to take social cues to know, oh, people stop eating after X amount of time that you've been eating. I have to just like realize like, oh, we're done. Everyone else is done.
We're not doing round five.
We're not. I guess I'll eat dessert now. Thanks, guy. And like that's the thing is that. And there was one time where me, Larry, we went to the Valley and we went to a Chinese buffet because that's what you do. And like it was me, Larry, and a couple of our big friends, dudes that were much bigger than me. And like I was like, you guys are chumps. Like you guys got nothing. Like nothing on me. But it, like I said, it's something that I don't get credit for. Some people have seen it, but then other times I'm like, I'm sorry. Like I feel like I should apologize for eating like this
maybe
in front of you.
You shouldn't get credit for it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a shameful
there
thing.
There is shame involved.
There is shame.
Yeah, right.
I saw your tweet about being as focused at a buffet line. Like as far as
I wanted to, I wish I had the same kind of like determination. Like to see things through to the end,
yeah.
With my unfinished projects, as I do, like when I get to the buffet,
I
have determination and strategy.
Oh yeah,
strategy.
I'm the Coach Popovich of buffet lines. Like I have, okay, what buffet we're at? Okay, this is pass one, pass two, pass three, pass four. We'll see how we're feeling at pass four, and then what like that.
Yeah,
I'm all about strategizing that stuff.
I headlined this one place out in Bossier City. It was about a year ago, 2 years ago. We were doing a big casino, and I took a comic with me, and that was a whole thing, too. He was a good guy, but it was like it's so stressful because I had to drive. I had to go all the way to pick him up, and we drove all the way out there. And then he was like giving me shit like as we're driving, like about music choices or whatever. I'm like, dude, I'm driving.
Yeah.
You know, get off my ass, right? And then we go to this hotel and the casino. Before the show, they give us like vouchers for the buffet, and I wasn't going to go nuts. And this is also back when I was still kind of lighter, so you know, again, fluctuating up and down. But knowing it's weird being fat Aaron mentality in medium Aaron or skinny medium
or skinny Aaron body.
All right.
If that makes sense, right? Yeah, because your body physically just can't eat the way it used to.
Yeah.
You know? Or if you're, it's just a confusing time. I remember we were at the buffet and I had a plate and I do what I normally do, which is you kind of take a look, you survey, and you're like, I'll come back for that. I'll avoid this altogether. I need a little something now, so maybe I'll get some of this and
we'll hit that up twice.
I got a light plate. Like, it's not a big plate. Okay. It's just, here's this light little plate. And he was started complaining about how terrible the food was. I'm like, of course, it's a buffet in a casino. It's not about the quality. Mm-mm. It's the quantity and the range. Yeah. That's the variety.
Variety and quantity.
And I remember, I was like, okay, all right, well, I keep complaining. And then I was about to get up and he's like, oh, you done? I'm like, I was going to go back. And he's like, you're getting a second plate? I'm like, is this your first time at a buffet?
What the hell is wrong with you? No.
And
still, a second plate is just implied at a buffet.
A buffet. Who? I want to know. Obviously, this guy.
Well,
but I want to know who's the person who pays whatever you pay for a buffet. And again, I had a voucher. But some of these casinos.
No, I hear
some of these casinos are like, what, 20 bucks, 30 bucks?
That's how, I feel about people who eat salads at buffet. Yeah. And I'm like, what? Why are you trying to be healthy?
You spend enough of your life eating that stuff?
Well, I'm just like, why are you trying to pass off bait? You're only, at a buffet.
Only a salad. Because you're like, oh, you're just starting off with that salad.
Oh, that only a salad's even worse.
Right.
Like, only a salad. I'm like, why'd you even come here? Right. Like, what is your problem?
We didn't even get the dessert plate. I can get, like, one buffet plate, you get all you need. Well, I need to go and get.
Well,
I
know, for some
chair up to the dessert portion of the buffet because I love sweets, but I also love just a little bit of everything.
Right,
so I
need
a little pie. I need a little bit of this. I don't. Your brain is thinking.
Oh no, you do. I know what you mean. You do. You need it. You gotta taste it. It's so funny. I went to one of my favorite places today, Thai Cafe. It's a fantastic.
I saw your photo.
Oh my gosh! It's they do a lunch buffet.
Yeah,
and everything is legit. It's so good. And they have these giant rules now. I don't know if you've been recently.
Yeah, they got
they
those
have
rules
a
there,
giant,
yeah.
I'm talking, you could see it on the highway billboard set of rules on like 10 different rules about like eat what
dating
you take.
No.
Like eat what you take, blah, blah, blah. But immediately I was like, oh, this is her. There's people who don't finish what they take. Like there's people who don't eat the food. Like,
it's funny because it's this big giant thing of 10 different rules, but essentially that's the bottom line.
The bottom line is like, that is the golden rule of
but it's different,
any kind of eating.
It's different variations of it. If you eat this particular bowl is for the sauces. If you use the bigger bowl, we're going to charge you for this particular sauce. And it's just very
but it all comes down to don't take more than you're going to eat.
But here's the thing. Yeah. It's like if you go to any other restaurant and you can't finish a regular plate that they bring you and you take like a to-go box, you know, a doggy bag or whatever, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody forced you to get up out of your chair at a buffet. Nobody forced you to go get that plate.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody forced you to scoop out whatever it was that you were going to scoop out on there. And then if you don't know what it's going to taste like, a little bit. Just get a little bit, put it on your plate, people. And you go, you know what? Not for me.
Yeah.
Boom, done.
You get it, go again, and get what you like. That's
I feel you.
Oh, man.
Oh. Yeah.
And I think the rules apply for because it's a Thai restaurant, and because for some people, I mean, 3/4 of that spread is exotic.
Yeah. See, that's,
or spicier than you might realize, or whatever.
Yeah. And then, like, so it's this thing of like, oh, whatever. I'm like, I'm long stay. I don't trust me. I will finish this plate, and just shout out to them. My favorite thing, it's they changed it now. They used to, on for their buffet, one of my favorite things they have is these fried pieces of chicken. It's just, they took a chicken, and then they fry it Thai style.
So good.
And it's amazing pieces of fried chicken. There's no batter, just fried. So that's a mainstay that they have there. If you order off the buffet, it used to be titled chicken wings.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought you would order chicken wings. So I always eat buffet there, but one night I'm like, oh, I'm going to pick it some food, go home. I'll take the chicken wings, thinking that it's going to be chicken wings. And it was just a styrofoam thing full. It was like a whole fried chicken.
Chopped up
into pieces. They finally took off the word wings.
Yeah.
Now it just says fried chicken. Nice. I'm like, all right.
It's very, very
good. But anyways,
good.
Wonderful place.
Right. Well, I am proud of your eating habits. I'm also proud of your being able to lose the weight. As well.
Oh, it's a constant struggle.
Of course.
It's a constant struggle. Of course. But I will not give it up. I will not. That was back when I started.
CC's for life.
Yeah. CC's for life.
I will not give it up. I was like, I've told people this many times, I've never tried my hardest to lose weight, because trying my hardest seems like it would be a hell of a life of not eating what I want. And I was like, right. I will never not eat what I want. Yeah, just case in point today, I ate so much today. So I had like 5 plates. It was magical.
Oh, that's awesome.
Anyway. All right. Answers on Facebook. What do you do something really good that you don't get credit? Ryan Timothy Brace says, being a creep. All right. I guess that's something you don't get credit for. Justin Cooper says he's really good at silently judging people. Andrew Thomas says constantly ducking responsibility.
Yeah.
Greg Forrest says, I excel at taking up space. Oh, man. These are all real.
Yeah, no one's giving you the credit for that. Yeah, that means no one's shoving it in your face. So yeah,
you're really good at taking up space, Greg. Travis K says, I'm not really good at or for much, but I feel I get too much positive credit for things I'm terrible at. Oh, so it's the reverse.
Okay.
Not sure if I'm really better than I think or if people are too kind. Sort of a bless your heart situation. Yeah. That's a good opposite question of that. What do you get a lot of credit for that you're not good at? Jessica Brusenio just says, my job.
Nice.
The whole job. Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of people.
Just people like...
Yeah, luckily, yeah.
This place would collapse without me.
Exactly. No. If I leave, it'll just fall to the ground.
No, yeah. I'm glad I'm not in that position. I'm like, nah, someone could do just as good as a job. I mean, not the same kind of job, but they'll be all right. Alfred Perez says, essay writing. Mm. I suppose you youngins call it blogging today. Start a blog. Larry Garza says accents, which is so funny because we found an old 2004 Comedia Go-Go program. So we used to make programs for our live sketch comedy shows, and we had bios for all of us. And one of them, the bios for Larry said, was Larry's a master of accents because he's so bad. Larry's the worst.
His Jamaican crossover to Russian is amazing.
Oh. No, that's the thing. You don't ever know what accent. He's the worst. Yeah. He's really, really
that
bad.
That is awesome.
Brandon Davidson says, making love.
Yo.
And here's RTB says, if you ain't getting no credit from no one, then you ain't that good at it, sucker. You right.
I think, you're right. So he's responding, I think.
Making love.
I heard that. Oh, that?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was just talking about my question in general.
No, but it is
kind of a general thing, but I think he was responding.
He was talking specifically to, I got it.
No, but I think in general, if you ain't getting no credit from no one, then you ain't that good at it, sucka. Although, Ryan Timothy Brace, though, he has seen me eat. When we hung out, when I was in Montreal, got to hang out with him, we ordered these giant poutine burgers, which are exactly what you think is a giant burger with a whole giant stack of French fries and gravy on it. We ordered one of those, and then I also ordered a large order of mac and cheese, to which the waiter was like, really? And I was like, yeah. To which afterwards, after we had finished it, the waiter was like, oh, man, you ate all of that. And I was like, yes. Yes, we did.
USA.
Yeah, USA. I'm straight. So, Ryan, RTB, you can give me credit for eating. Yeah. Carlos Castro says, people know the Carlos that can name the bones while he breaks them. He doesn't get credit for people that know the Carlos. But he says, but no one talks about the Carlos, the nurturer, who can set those bones and take care of you while you recover. True, that is Carlos. Yeah, he's a freaking therapy person. He can help you, but he can also destroy you.
Yeah,
I guess he gets too much credit for being a warrior. Charles Gomez says, finding an accurate gift for any situation.
Oh, all right. Nice.
That's
a good talent.
Oh, Gabe Diaz is playing Dark Souls 2, Scholar of the First Sin. Really?
No, well, who would give you credit for that?
I have a combined 300 hours logged into this version in the original non-updated game.
No one, it's the whole thing. No one's going to fucking give me my PhD for fucking Pikmin 3, except for me.
Also, super overqualified for my night front desk job at Schlitterbahn. You're holding that place together, Gabe.
Yeah, if you left the place, would fall down.
Stephen Colton says, the credit for my artistic achievements are often shared with those around me, even when they do nothing or even have a negative impact on the performance. Well, not the worst thing ever. It does negatively impact my morale and make me want to give up one of the few things that gets me out of the house and interacting with people outside of the work. So that's another question is, what do other people get credit for that you do?
Yeah.
Rachel Norberg says, diplomacy. I'm far more diplomatic than I'm given credit for. I grew up on the West Side. Diplomacy isn't exactly our thing. You know? And Marvin Lanier says, getting my job done. I can get it done quickly and efficiently.
You want someone to buy you lunch? Come on, man.
I was going to say, good job getting your job done.
I give you credit.
It's called a paycheck.
I would buy you lunch.
Joaquin Muentes.
That's what the money is for.
Right?
Yeah, the paycheck is the thank you.
And Joaquin Muentes says, my music and Los Nahualatos.
Oh, man. You need more credit for that because that's an outstanding gig there.
So, yeah, there's a lot of people out there who don't get credit for a lot of the things they do.
It sounds like a whiny thing to even ask. You know what I mean? Like, but I think that a lot of people walk around feeling unappreciated.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that leads to so much hostility, whether we realize it or not. Like, people, I don't want to bring it back to the election or whatever like that, but I think years and years of people feeling like they're putting in hard work and they're not seeing any benefit from
God,
it. They're not being appreciated.
That's the worst.
Turns into anger.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden everybody's enemies. And it's like, if everybody could just step back and realizing, like, everybody's going through that. Everybody I know is busting their ass.
Right,
you know what I mean? I know that there are freeloaders out there, but everybody I know has got a goal. Everybody wakes up. Everybody goes to a job. Everybody is trying to make things happen while they're juggling, you know, a dozen things. And the hardest thing you can do sometimes is, like, step back and go, that person over there who I think's a prick, doing the exact same thing, you know? Right, so...
Yeah.
Anyway.
So parenting. Fuck it. That's a Larry.
Yeah, good job filling it in.
Yeah, exactly. Is that what he Yeah, that's how he ends every second with parenting. Fuck it.
They're like, parenting. Fuck it.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So now it's time for my segment called Hey, That's Not Funny, where we talk about not funny stuff. And today, we got a good one.
Oh, boy.
This is coming from Chapman University study that just came out this past October, Chapman University recently completed its third annual University Survey of American Fears. I just think that's a great thing that they
third annual.
I feel like
we
should have been tracking this
a while.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
This might just be Chapman
this
University. Chapman University.
Is their,
it's much different
yeah,
than
survey,
the other
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, exactly. I think they do a survey every year, but this is Chapman's.
Yeah, it's Chapman University third annual. I don't know. That's just a fun thing. Their third annual Survey of American Fears. So the survey asked respondents about 65 fears across a broad range of categories. Including government, crime, environment, future, technology, blah, 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 all sorts of stuff. So they questioned about 1,500 adult participants, and you posted the actual picture of the top 10 fears of 2016. Now, this is...
In that chart form.
In the chart form. So the biggest fear, 60%, was corruption of government officials. So 60% of people were afraid of that. 41%... the next one, number two, was terrorist attack on the nation, right? Yeah. And it's so funny. Number three, it goes from like crazy, like terrorist. Number two is terrorist attack on the nation to the most personal. One of the most personal things is inadequate funds for the future. So it goes from like, oh, God, we're going to get attacked by terrorists. Oh, wait, I don't have money. I shouldn't even be caring about it. Like, that's such a weird.
That's a good gap. That's a good jump.
Yeah, as far as
it all goes together. If you've got money, then you can build a bunker.
You don't care.
You can buy all of those buckets of doomsday prepper food.
Yeah. I'm going to be getting some potato soup.
Potato soup and then get a bucket.
Number four, victim of terrorism, which is different than terrorist attack on the nation. So I guess
you are a personal victim of terrorism.
So there's someone bombs some other place. I'm afraid that's going to happen. But then number four is I'm afraid it's going to happen to me.
Right.
Number five, gun control. They're just afraid of, I don't know, I need to look into this because I don't know if they're afraid.
That means of their guns being taken away
or that there's a loosening of it and that there's people running around with guns. And this is kind of sad when you look at it. Number six, way past all these other things we've talked about, loved ones dying.
Because there's a thing, is this, when they survey them, do they just openly say, what is the thing that you're going to be afraid of for the year of 2016? Or was it, what are you afraid of in terms of, as American, are you afraid of?
These are 1,500 Americans.
Or was there a list of options?
Well, they said they had 65 different, different things. And these are the top 10 of the 65.
Oh,
so I guess you can just click on what you're afraid of.
All right.
But still, loved ones dying, number six.
Wow.
behind terrorist attack on the nation.
Yeah, that's baffling.
And inadequate funds.
Yeah, that's crazy. So baffling.
And then next one is economic financial collapse of the entire country,
yep.
Which I would say put that ahead of you not having inadequate funds. Like it's yeah. All, anyway, number seven, identity theft. Which, I mean, that's a rational, but, real fear.
Yeah, especially, yeah, and then also being put into the media of, like, something that could actually be happening to you in the past few years. Products advertised specifically this to prevent you from getting your identity stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a perpetual, like, fear, I guess.
And then number eight is identity theft. Number nine, loved ones seriously ill. So not dying, but them just getting seriously ill. And the last one... which they, I don't know. It'll be interesting because this was in October. Affordable Health Care Act / Obamacare. There were, I don't, and once again, I don't know if they're worried about that they're going to have it
or about the fear of
losing away.
Yeah.
Well, now it's pretty much going to be gone. Now that's January, they're already saying they're going to be gutting the bill.
So wait, yeah. So not in October, they would be the more,
I don't know,
fear, because prior to Trump winning, and the possibility of that thing, why would that be like the thing to be feared?
Depending on who won, knowing whether something would be fortified or changed
or
totally outright repealed. But those are all things that I'm like going through right now. Like, especially like since I don't do benefits through a day job,
right?
Like I'm having to get insurance on my own,
right? Yeah. Right, right.
And I've had to pay for my own insurance for the last several years,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then. I came to a very horrific realization that I let my insurance lapse. Like I didn't pay attention and they didn't offer the same kind of coverage. And so I didn't elect a new thing. And I was getting, the whole family got like really sick with some sort of crud over the holidays. It was really bad. The little one got like strep throat. I remember feeling really bad. And I didn't go to the doctor, just kind of like mm-hmm. waiting it out. I'll take the little one to the pediatrician.
Right.
I'll wait till you see what the pediatrician says. I'm like, well, maybe that's what I got too. And maybe I'll take a little bit of it. You know, whatever. But then I found out after the fact that I had not been covered.
Ooh,
for like last like week. I was like, oh, I better do something about
yeah.
that. Because I actually knew somebody where we got laid off together. And part of the layoff was that you were given a
unemployment,
like yes, severance.
Oh, severance.
Sorry, but then benefits, like we were laid, certain benefits carried over.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Including, you know, like health or dental or whatever it is. I found out that over the course of that severance period, that he had actually passed away in his sleep. He was a younger guy. He was only a few years older than me at the time. He was a young dad. He had a kid, and I remember just like, oh my God, how terrible. But it's a good thing that severance thing was there. It's a good thing those benefits were there. And then I found out after the fact on my own, like I felt good about me. Like at least right. I'm still taking care of my family. No, not all those benefits carried over. You still had a little bit of insurance coverage, but all of the life insurance, mm-hmm. all that stuff would be paid out to your family if you died, did not carry over.
Damn.
And I'm like, that's what's going to get you. Is like reading the fine print.
Yeah, man.
And making sure everything's lined up. All that you read to me is all related. Like if the economy collapses and you don't have any money or you have money saved up or it's in stocks, it doesn't matter because the value is going to plummet and everybody's going to riot and loot and they're going to take your buckets and all sorts of stuff is going to happen. They take away your guns. You got nothing. You know, you can't shoot off any looters. I understand. It's all related.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that
those are for 2016. So now,
yeah, exactly. So that's for 2016, and that brings me to my question, which is, what is your biggest fear for this upcoming year? The good old 2017. I know everyone was dogging on 2016, saying it was a terrible year, and so I'm interested to read the answers as far as what everyone's saying. But I mean, sadly, I mean. This is probably, you know, everyone's talking about, of course, it's Trump. There's no way around it. It's something that I don't want to talk about, but that it is a fear. Like, I think it's the unknown I always say you fear the unknown. It's the unknown of what in God's name is going to happen
right.
with this dude as president. Like, it's pretty terrifying to the point where I've stepped back and I can't watch his speeches. I can't read anymore about him. It's at the point where months ago after you're like, oh, there's no way he's going to continue running for president after he said this or did this or this came out. And you're like, oh, this is going to destroy him. After
Nail
none
in
of
the
that,
coffin, man.
After,
in the coffin.
After no. none of that destroyed him, I was like, oh God, we can't get any worse.
He cannot be stopped.
He can't be stopped. And that's what's really scary is when everybody, people you know, X amount of the population of our country are like, oh, he's cool. He's one of us. And you're like, but no. And you're like, okay, well, that's the world we live in now. What's it going to take? Like, what is it going to, that's the unknown fears. What's it going to take for everybody to go, oh, he is a horrible human being.
Right.
And that's terrifying.
Yeah, because the bar's already been set.
Like,
and jumped over.
It's going to take, oh, we have footage of him, like, literally stabbing children in the face. And people are like, well, but was it for a show? Or, like what's it going to take?
What did those little evil children
exactly.
do to deserve that stabbing in the face?
And so finally, hopefully, him stabbing the children's faces, when that footage comes out, people are like, oh, he is a monster. Let's vote him out or something. Because getting a blowjob in the Oval Office isn't going to take him out. Like, none of that Clinton stuff is going to freaking work. It's not going to work. Like, it's going to be terrifying to think what it's going to take.
Lying about weapons of mass destruction and going to war with a country that had nothing to do.
That is nothing.
That's not going to work.
That is nothing.
We are going to get into so many wars because of Twitter. We are going to...
okay, here's another thing. Speaking of Twitter, if you own Twitter, it is a private... You own it. It's a business. You can go like, we're going to... You're done. You're out of Twitter.
Nobody owes the president.
Exactly. Yeah. You can say, hey, Twitter people, you can say, no, you're done. We're shutting him down. You can do that, and he can't be like, no, you have to give me Twitter. It's like, no, I know you're the president, but we're a business, and you love businesses, and you're done. You're done with Twitter. And I'm sure they're not, because they're making a ton of revenue off of people just following his Twitter. But, God, I wish that Twitter would be like, okay, we're cutting you off. So, sorry. So, that's my fear. It's really just, like I said, the fear of the unknown. For 2017. I haven't looked at any of the answers, because I'm wondering how many of them involve Trump. If not, but it'd be weird to ask that question... like that, do that survey now that they just did.
I'm not going to pretend that I understand everything about everything, but when the people who are paid to track this kind of stuff are also panicking, you know, the people who report on this stuff, the people who have the statistics, the people who can say, this has never happened before, you know, good, bad, they're not making judgments. They're like, we don't know because this type of thing has never happened before. That's when I get worried.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the people, the machine was chugging along, good, bad, whatever. It was chugging along. Now everybody's just kind of like, it's going to be an all out brawl.
And part of me hopes that nothing's going to happen. You know, like really, like he'll be bad, but he won't be that bad in 4 years.
Well, the hope is that checks and balances actually works.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then it's so funny because I always go back to Bill Hicks's joke about when you become president, they take you to a dark room and they show you footage of Kennedy getting shot from a different angle. And then just go, any questions? And I'm hoping someone's done that to him, right? Someone's
done that
to Trump.
I've never seen so many rational people pray that the shadow government reveal itself finally.
Like, right?
There's so many people.
Like, oh, thank God. The Illuminati's
the black
in charge.
The black ops copters. Thank God. They're here. Like,
it's like, oh. Like, seriously, I'm like, yes, I really hope that the president has zero control over the country and we're really run by five giant corporations. Like, that would make me feel better right now, knowing that those five corporations
are in the cabinet now.
Right? Oh, yeah. My God. So technically,
exactly,
they are.
Technically, yeah.
Anyway, what are you all guys afraid of for this year?
Spiders?
No, you can say spiders.
Generic type of thing. I'm an optimist at heart. I try to just think of the bright side of everything, including, you know, the outcomes of the election, everything. I do, like, that's my faith, what little life, because I'm a very, like, it doesn't matter who's sitting in the presidential seat. Yeah. It's more about I won't say it doesn't matter, but to me, I've always viewed is that the person sitting in the presidential seat is our representative to the world of who, what we stand for. So it's always been, please let it be a person of integrity.
Yeah.
Please let it be a person of just who won't get us into trouble. Who, again, talks to the other nations and says, whatever needs to be said to keep the peace, and checks and balances. And it's a system with a bunch of gears and questionable, like, who's really in charge. I'm kind of, you know, it's not conspiracy nut, but it's really a bunch of stuff that happens overnight. I mean, it was reported literally overnight that, you know, the repeal for Obamacare
yep.
happened in the shadows of the night. Like, yeah. it's not, that's not a joke. They really do operate at weird hours of the night doing stuff that we don't know about mm-hmm. until somebody points it out. So to me, the president has always been like,
who? One of the first things they did last week was try to dismantle like an ethics.
Right, yeah. And then they got. And
luckily, yeah. someone
and so that,
was upset, and they're like, okay, we're not going to do it.
So,
yeah.
So that was my thing. Is like, it doesn't really matter who's in the seat as long as they have a person's integrity. And this is the first time that, you know, again, as it was coming toward this election, I'm like, it doesn't really matter because it's just, as long as it's not going to fuck up everything. And then here we are. I'm kind of like, oh, you know what? It finally matters. I changed my mind. I was wrong. It matters. And as it got, as the reality was sinking in, oh, this, it's not a joke anymore. This is not a fucking game show joke of a thing where it's going to blow over. We're going to pass this. And as the power rose and the ego and the actual positioning, I was like, oh shit, this is a possibility. I care. I care. And you know, I've always kind of cared to some extent, but now I cared even more. So the fear that I have is that I get too apathetic and I'm not losing this kind of uphill of being more attentive. I've always been attentive. I hate talking politics with people yeah. and religion because it just goes south when you talk to people. But that's really because of just a, it's a greedy thing. It's a discomfort that I don't want to have. But the reality is that you need to have those conversations with the right kind of people to understand that side of wherever they're in and come to means, at least an understanding of why do you feel that way, and not so much change their mind, but understand that this person exists. This person is not an idiot. Like, he's a functioning person in society.
Yeah.
He's not an idiot,
yeah.
but feels this particular way. And you need to understand that and see that. And now this is a thing that with all the things that have come away, I've kind of gotten this change of heart to where I feel I need to be more attentive and not soak up every tragedy and engulf myself and change the viewpoint, but just be a little more attentive of what's going on and more active about it. And my fear is that I go back to a sense of apathy where I don't care.
Right.
But where I've always cared, but because it was safe, I felt for the past past 8 years for the past, however many years, even again, you know, what people say, George W. Bush doesn't seem so bad now because of blah, but it really was like, oh, this horrible stuff's happening. I'm not really happy with it or whatever. But there's still this kind of shadow of, again, checks and balances. Well, this will work out because it won't go this far.
Yeah.
And so now I just hope that my attentiveness just won't go away and apathy won't just roll over and I'm or staying a little uninterested.
Things that don't sit well with you will seem normal a year from now.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a weird thing.
Right.
You know?
I'm not afraid of that happening because it's not the, you know, there's this whole thing about like, oh, PC culture and people are getting more offended and da da da. It's like, oh, I've never been offended about things, but now things that people will get offended by, it's like it's there's a joke or there's a humor to it, but then now there's a thing where, oh, it's not funny when you're staring it right in the face or when it's said to you and it's reality.
Yeah.
Someone being racist, like racism and sexism and all those things to me are comical because they're outdated viewpoints.
Yeah.
They exist. I know they exist. I'm not saying they don't exist, but when I see someone who is racist or sexist, I'm like, well, you're a dinosaur.
Yeah.
You're out of here. Like, when you go and died, they're all gonna laugh gleefully. Remember that fucking racist, sexist idiot or whatever the hell? You're a dinosaur, you're dead. And then the thing is, it sets in. You talk to this person and they're right in front of you and you're like, oh, you're not an idiot, but you're just a functioning person in this society, but you have this viewpoint. And then it's like, okay, it's just something that's very interesting. It's coming up a little bit more, and you know, I don't know.
To that point, it's like, I can't believe, and I don't know much how much of it was like media hysteria or whatever, but like literally what you talked about in the guise of alt-right neo-Nazism, Ku Klux Klan, like, I thought we dealt with all of this. That was that kind of thing. It was like,
right.
Why are there people still in robes?
Yeah.
Why are there people still giving Nazi salutes? Why are there still people thinking that this is a good idea, that's a good idea? Like, how have these people not been either exposed to other cultures yet?
Yeah.
How? Forget about changing minds, changing whatever. Just living among other people
in this day and age,
you know, should expose you to so many different points of view that are, you know, a little bit, you know,
you
different
like,
than your
oh,
own.
Wait, this is horrible
oh,
wait, and terrible.
This is an actual. I don't know how many times I've heard somebody, and the joke is, oh, they're one of the good ones. You know, like yeah. everybody knows somebody who's like a little bit racist or maybe really racist or even homophobic, but then they have that one gay family member mm-hmm. or something like that, and it's like, well, you know, so and so's okay, and when they bring their girlfriend to the, you know, Thanksgiving, that's all. But it's like, well. Why can't you understand that that's a human being
yeah.
and there's a whole world of other human beings out there, and if you're going to cut this person slack, if you do, why do you think that they're the outlier? Why do you think they're the one that deserves your patience and they that
and
deserve
I
your
think
understanding?
That's what it comes down to. It's not in their world, so if it's not in their world, it's just they don't care. It's not real to them. It's yeah. not real to them, and so they're going to just write it off.
Until it's a threat. For some reason, the threat is real. I don't know.
No, and that's what it all comes down to is the threat, is the giant fear that all of that's going to destroy their... If two men get married in some other state, that's going to ruin their lives.
What if somebody forces me to make a cake I don't want to make?
Oh, God, how dare them?
Oh,
forget it. End of the world.
Yeah.
Oh, what is your...
Yeah, like on a macro level, I'm worried about all of this. Politics, yeah. the end of the world, everything. No joke, I'm watching some of these... I listened to InfoWars Wars for the first time.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
You know?
Again,
it's hilarious, but then you realize how very much prepared one side is for the end of times,
mm-hmm.
Where there are people who genuinely believe and support sponsors and buy... buckets of doomsday prepper food, or they buy ammunition, or they buy weapons, or that. And I totally understand why somebody would want to do that. If you hear what you've been hearing and you're realizing, I need to take care of myself, I need to take care of my family, and I'm going to do that with these weapons and this food and, you know, whatever. But like, as I'm listening to it, I'm like, I am grossly underprepared. Like, when shit really hits the fan. And I'm, you know, pushing my children in a grocery cart down an abandoned highway, and there's like a fuselage over to the side smoldering, whatever yeah, like yeah. that. I have zero skills. I won't be able to. I was watching Castaway the other day, and that idea of like having to learn how to hunt and create fire, that might be a real possibility in about a generation or so. Oh, where you're like, I need to learn that shit. I need my kids to be in the scouts now.
Yeah.
Right?
So that they can
learn. They're your doomsday prepping. They're your doomsday prepping. It's like, okay, guys, you need to learn how to suture, like heal wounds, create a fire, hunt. This is your job now.
Start the breathing. Stop the bleeding.
Yeah.
Apply pressure.
But
right?
You know, it's funny that that's like the extreme thing, but it's also kind of a regret thing in the sense that you know, I myself personally didn't do the hunting. I was in Boy Scouts, but only took it so far. So you learn the basics of like, okay, outdoor stuff, and then you forget it when you grow up. But okay, so like hunting and growing crops and all that stuff is things that we take for granted. And I go, but even to go one step down, this is a real thought that I had, and it's inspired by one of Regan's favorite people, Mike Rowe. Mike Rowe is he's a champion of telling people, if you want a job, learn a trade.
Right.
That's his whole foundation. That's what his organization is like, learn, you know, college isn't for everybody. If people want to do college, they want to get a job, that's wonderful, but it's not for everybody. You want to like get a job in America, learn a trade. You will succeed if you learn how to weld. You will succeed if you learn how to plumbing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I had the real, and again, it's not fear-based. This was just, again, like you think about the future, regardless of who's in position. It's just a general, it was just a real thought of like, maybe I should learn a trade, because
when shit hits the fan, who's going to need a comedian?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I was like, what videos am I going to be editing at this point in time, or blah, 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 but I can fix a fucking broken pipe or something like that.
In the movie Running Man, when they were getting out the signal to video, you know, they still needed a dude to run the cameras right, and the editing.
That
so you could
true.
Still have it, yeah. you know.
I feel good. I feel like I feel job security. I feel okay about it. But I had a genuine idea of AV like specialist. Maybe I need to learn how to go back and carve wooden cars.
What you're saying is when the stormtroopers come,
right,
and they ask you what purpose you serve, and you tell them that you could do propaganda for the state,
Dad, right. You're good.
Then you're in a good place.
Yeah, I know I'm going to get by strictly by my cold black heart and my ability to see all of you guys as wasters of my
the world becomes your buffet.
Yeah, exactly. And this is once again, this is a common theme amongst my friends in the podcast is if it goes to once that water stops turning out of your faucet,
I'm
you stay away
here.
From me.
I am not
because you
here.
Are just.
But that's going on now. I mean, there are places in this country.
True, right? Yeah, I know.
There are places in this country that have no water.
That's terrifying. Yeah,
that's terrifying to me.
Oh, my God. For months.
There's certain things that you grow up taking for granted. There's certain things, and it comes from a point, and I don't want to use the word because it's such a trigger word, and trigger is even a trigger word, but from a point of privilege, there's an American privilege that you come to expect certain things, and you expect the sun to come up, you expect the water to come out of a faucet, you expect a light to come on,
right.
You expect food to be at the grocery store, you expect gas to be a reasonable price.
I know,
do you know what I mean? Like, and so when these things aren't happening or they're not going to happen, people panic when things are fine.
Yeah.
So
people panic when gas is like a couple bucks more.
Right. So when things get really, really testy, you know, I'm really worried about the ugliness that will come. That'll be the moment where most of us, where all of us really need to be. If we're not in the mindset that we're all in this together yet, then I don't know what they're.
And that's what going back to my fear, what's it going to take for everyone to go like, oh, wait,
I've been saying it as a joke, but it's like we are never going to get into that final frontier Star Trek life. We are never until things get really, really bad.
Well,
we can't put our shit to the side and come together to do things like take care of ourselves, clean water or health insurance or any of these things.
And for this, I've been saying this for years. I was like, the reason why
a wall, we're building a wall instead of spaceships. We're building spaceships.
And this is kind of why Trump won is the reason why you only get like 50%, if that, of Americans to go vote is because the other half are cool with everything right now. They're happy. It's the unhappy people that go out there and vote. And that's why probably Trump won is because there's a lot, like he said, a lot of people who don't feel like they're working hard and not getting anything. They wanted to change that's why they voted. And so like, it's the thing that's going to unite us all is horrible, horrible, horrible things like terrible, terrible economy, like horrible.
It's hilarious that's been it's not even like one or two people. It's like a common thread that I've read in the rise of this is that some people view his presidency and his rise to power and everything as this giant like wrestling heel / the Dark Knight twist type of thing is like, my point is to bring everyone to the low, to raise everybody higher. Is this like the plan all along was to be shitty to prove how great people can be. And that's not something I read one person say. That's like a real,
that's giving a thing, lot of
bonafide thought.
However, if you want to say that good, bad, whatever, what he has done is pointed out a lot of American hypocrisy. He's pointed out a lot of corruption that already exists. I mean,
but now you have a spotlight on it.
You got a spotlight on it, so maybe there's something that could be fixed. My worry is that people see it and they don't think there's anything worth fixing. There's nothing that we need to change.
This is good.
So all of that is, I think, on a macro level. Like on a personal level, I took this year to kind of like feel more connected to the family and get healthy, and I'm nowhere near healthy, and I'm afraid, and I mean like emotionally, physically, weight wise, I mean medicating wise, like I'm afraid that I won't get back on track. And I think like from the outside, like everything's been looking okay, but like from where I'm sitting, I'm like, I really had my shit together for a while, and I really don't have it together right now. I want it to get back together. And so it's just, that's the goal. And, you know,
I think as long as you're, like aware to me always. To me, if anybody has a problem and they're aware of it, that's always that first like, okay, you're there.
That awareness, if it doesn't turn into action, all of a sudden becomes another way to beat yourself up.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you're aware of the problem, but you don't do anything about it, then not only are you doing the bad behavior, but that voice inside your head is like, you son of a bitch.
You're actually, it's stabbing you back.
Yeah. You got to be careful.
Yeah. God damn it. All right. Well, this
positive
is
positive note.
I was going to say, this is definitely not funny stuff we're talking about. So let's see what answers that the Facebook community says. Ryan Timothy Bray says he is afraid of continued loneliness.
Aww. Oh,
womp womp.
What's the guy's name?
Ryan Timothy Brace, RTB.
Oh, he's the one who gave me shit about mine, but they're mine. Be lonely.
And once again, womp womp and Larry's health. So,
Larry's
we are all afraid about that. Yes, we're all afraid.
Again, that's the optimism. So he's past that. That's why I don't.
Justin Cooper says failing. Again, specifically failing at bettering myself. And
oh, there.
And Cold War II / World War III.
Yeah.
There you go. Andrew Thomas says the continued personification of a year being out to get you. 2016 was an evil. 2017 isn't out to get us. Greg Forrest said fear itself. There you go. Good answer. Carlos Castro says, I fear that my FEMA camp won't have good Wi-Fi.
Oh, no kidding. That keeps me up at night. Not being able to find Wi-Fi or an outlet.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Working with high school students, never are they more terrified than when their battery is at like 2% and there's not an outlet around. Yeah. Oh, that is panic. I've seen the panic in a high schooler's face. It's like, I'm like, this is affecting you on a whole
one
nother.
Last Instagram.
Athena Wood says, I'm with Judson. So what did Judson say?
Failing again, or World War III.
Oh, and a fear that we will all be forced to get a Trump stamp. Like, it's like a tramp stamp.
Yeah, a tramp stamp, but it's
Trump stamp
in your butt, back of your butt.
That's what they're going to call like
right above the crack.
You're going to get a Trump stamp.
A Trump stump.
Trump stamp is on your fupa.
Oh, right. Just right slightly below the belly button. Josh Pullen says he's afraid of Satan's butthole.
All right.
Fair enough.
I've never thought about it, but now I'm immediately filled with fear.
Yeah.
About that.
Right.
Very thing.
To me, the fear is, why is this happening? Why am I around it?
Well, is that maybe a name for like a stretch of highway we don't know about?
Yeah, that's true.
Is that like Satan's butthole? Like maybe a really dangerous like Dead Man's Curve?
Or it's like a cave diving thing where it's like a cave in like South Africa. It sounds better in their language.
Personally,
it translates to Satan's butthole.
We went vacationing, and I'm glad I got my scuba certificate because we were able to go to the caverns at where was that Satan's butthole
at Quantrantana, which translates to Satan's butthole,
and it's hard to get to. But once you're there, it is actually so breathtaking.
Scary at first.
There's a lot of sulfur smell. You know,
right?
But it's warm and it's.
And they say it has healing.
It has healing waters. The healing waters of Satan's butthole.
Personally, I loved it when it was the boomerang, but ever since they changed it to Satan's butthole, I don't think it's as good of a roller coaster as it used to be. But, you know, I'll get on it.
Did you hear about that lady on Satan's butthole last year? The whole family tried to sue.
Remember when Remember you used to ride Satan's butthole and it was the wooden planks and you'd get a lot of back pains, but now they really smoothed it out. Satan's butthole.
It's scarier, but a good scary.
Right.
I watched the guy throw up while he was riding Satan's butthole. It was the most disgusting thing ever because the G's kept putting it right back in his.
Or is that just like how hardcore, like conservative, Hagee Cornerstone church kind of people was like, beware of Satan's butthole.
As an actual entity.
Like revelations. Like it's a thing. Like we don't know about
Satan. As we fall into the descent of Satan's butthole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the 10th pit of hell for hardcore Christians. Travis K says, I fear not improving upon myself, letting my family and friends down, and failing to be positive. There's so much terrible crap afoot, and I don't want to contribute to it. I want to be someone who can help carry the weight for another and brighten their day.
You will be.
Yeah. Alfred Press says,
I want to tell you a little story about that, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I know we're already at the 2-hour mark, so why the hell not? When I was a little kid, I went to go see Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. And I vividly remember, I had to have been like 2.
Right.
3, if that. I remember going to the theater. I remember going with my mom, and I remember just, this is a whole new Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
These are the characters I know. This is amazing. And then the idea that he would meet Yoda, and if you remember, like, you take it for granted again, all the revelations, right? But at the time, he's this funny little guy. Mm-hmm. You don't know that he's this Jedi master.
Yeah. You're expecting somebody who's wise and powerful. Yeah.
Or large, it's a this Muppet. Amazing warrior. Yeah. But it's a Muppet. But at the time, I'm like, this guy is hysterical.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going through his stuff and he's bothering everybody and he's hitting on R2-D2. Like, this guy is awesome. And then when he reveals who he is, and Luke says, just teach me, I'm not afraid. And then Yoda, like a puppet, narrows its eyes. And it goes, you will be.
Yeah.
That you will be. I remember at like 2 years old going, check out.
Yeah, I'm done. Terrifying.
I just watched Darth Vader. I just watched all these beasts. I watched a Wampa rip an arm, like all this, whatever. But this Muppet staring you back
that's
in the
heavy
face.
Heavy stuff.
I was like, we got to go. My mom was like, okay. And I was like, I threw on a whole. Like,
oh, really?
Like, yeah, so we left the theater.
Oh, wow.
I never saw the ending. My mom never saw the ending. The whole revelation with the handoff and the, you know, Lou. Like, all of that was a total surprise when we watched it, when it finally came out on TV or video or whatever it was. But I was talking about this recently because of Rogue One and all that. I was going through all these memories, but like, somebody had revealed, like, I didn't know that Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader were the same person. Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I was like, how? What?
Yeah.
Like, how do you? And when I was a little kid, when Return of the Jedi came out, my uncle took me to see that. And I was over the moon. Like, the two of us went to go see it. And, you know, I was the right age to where Ewoks didn't bug me.
Perfect.
Right. You know, and Jabba the Hutt was this insane thing. And, all of it was fantastic, right? I remember seeing that, and then not too much longer after that, there was a group of us with our school, and it might have been like a summer daycare or something kind of program where we were going to go to the movies, and that's not a normal thing. I remember it not being a normal thing, and we were going to go see Return of the Jedi, and I had already seen it, and I was like, badass, I don't care, I get to see it again.
Hell yeah.
And I remember sitting there with this class of ours, and there's guys, girls, and we're all like 6, you know, years old. About maybe 4 or 5 years old.
That's awesome.
And there was one girl talking the whole time about the movie who had no idea what was going on.
Oh.
And it was like, so where are they now? Who is that guy? And I remember just like, shut up. I'm trying to watch this movie. And then the scene where they're building the second Death Star and Darth Vader comes and he's like, we'll double our efforts. Yeah, that whole scene where he's like, the Emperor's not too pleased. She was like, now who is that guy?
Oh.
And I was like, it's Darth Vader. Like the most famous dude in the galaxy. What? Who?
Yeah.
Why are you here?
Yeah.
And she goes, and she'd been talking the whole time. Right? And we're only like 5-10 minutes into the movie. And she goes, is he a good guy or a bad guy? And I remember just going, look at him!
His name is Darth Vader.
Listen to what he just said!
He's a large dude pointing his finger. He's wearing all black. He's got a scary helmet. And I remember that's when like the counselor was like, Aaron, enough, out.
Oh, no.
I wasn't shouting. I was answering this other girl's question.
Yeah.
And I remember, this is back in the day, you couldn't do this. I had to go sit in the hall, on the little bench outside the movie theater, just like sitting there, and you can hear like all the explosions and shit going on inside. I'm like, that bitch.
Yeah.
That bitch didn't know who Darth Vader was. Or, I mean, I didn't have that vocabulary at the time, but I remember thinking it. Oh, I definitely had those feelings.
Whatever the childhood equivalent of that.
Yeah, that was what you were saying.
Oh, that Polly Poofer.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you remember her name?
No, I don't remember her name. I don't remember why we even got onto that.
Because you're talking about Yoda.
Yeah.
That's
good. It's a good trigger word.
It's a very triggered. Yeah.
Man, I can't believe you left. It's hardcore. Back to the failure.
Yeah.
Back to the fears. Alfred Perez says he's afraid of failure. Not that it will fail, but fear of failure is keeping me from failing. All right. Larry says dying. Look, we're all afraid of dying, Larry. Yeah. We're all going to die.
We all going to die one day.
Elizabeth Castro that says that she's afraid that she will get deeper into debt instead of improving my finances. Hey, that's one of the things. That's there you go. Gabe Diaz says having to stay in Corpus for another year. My parents, since they just got divorced, and of course Larry's health. Oh. Kevin Colton says my biggest fear this year is alienating my friends, as several of my closest friends have moved away, and I'm starting a new chapter of my life. Living solo for the first time in 10 years. My social anxiety keeps me from going out, which triggers depressive depressive episodes when people don't think I'm worth inviting to hang out.
Aw. It gets better.
Yeah. Rachel Norberg says, having to repeat roller coaster of 2016. I can't handle that much. BS. Marvin Lanier says, Trump is my biggest fear. Yep. And Stacey Medina says, failure. So...
So the failure. Everyone's afraid of the failure, personal failure.
But I think that that failure can mean all sorts of things. We can go back to the financial thing. It can mean, you know, maybe not getting that job or getting, you know, it's rough. I totally understand, especially when you do anything remotely creative. I understand the feeling that in your head, as long as it's in your head, it's perfect.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like you may have not figured everything out yet.
Absolutely.
But in your head, that drawing.
It's amazing.
That movie. Yeah. That sketch.
Perfect.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
And the moment you put pen to paper, it becomes real and it becomes imperfect.
Well,
I didn't mean to put that there. Oh, shit. Now this is ruined.
This doesn't make sense at all. I think that's every artist.
Stops people.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people stop before they even start.
Right.
Yeah. That's so many artists. I think especially... Like I said, especially with the bigger film projects that we made, that utter fear of we've spent years on this and there's a chance it could suck.
Yeah.
Like that is a giant, giant fear of, and so I can't imagine, you know, and this is, you know, even though it's on a smaller scale for what we've done, but like having huge projects that you pour your soul and heart into.
Because that's the you know, for last year, it's funny because it's. Worst movie I saw in the theaters was Suicide Squad. Right. It was terrible and easily one of the worst things I've seen in the theater in a long time. But I still sympathize or maybe empathize for the people that went behind it with the intentions of they had a vision and for whatever reasons, like it could be studio control or maybe they didn't able to execute this particular part of the script way, so they had to compromise and do it this way. All the compromises that go into filmmaking ends up being the final result of what it is. And no matter hell or high water, they have to deliver that good. That, you know, they were, you know, more or less commissioned. Your job is to finish this thing by this date. We're putting a lot of money into building up expectations and people are expecting to see this particular thing because it has these cherished characters and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And your job is to put this vision together and then the vision comes out. And then from a large amount of people it go, oh, that vision didn't execute well. And I did not like it for these amount of reasons. There's still a lot of people that enjoyed it thoroughly, like to a high degree. So there's that satisfaction, but there is that thing of like, I can't imagine like how crushing it could be to put what you think is your heart and soul into a project and then end up being in the heaven go someone say, oh, that's the worst thing I've seen all year long. And I apologize, but I can't change.
You can like what you like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I know, and I understand that to me, I've always felt, oh, maybe I'm going to lose. I'm going to be more selective of my words because when I was younger, I'd see something, oh, what a piece of shit and just blah. And then, you know, after doing and executing your own projects on a really shitty small scale that no one will ever see and, you know, all this other stuff, even on that micro scale, I understand, like, okay, I understand how much work it can go into something, but even after all that, I still
Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and I still go see something and I go, oh, shit, man, that they settled on that. And
as terrible as those 2 hours were for you, that was somebody else's 3 years of their life.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And it's tough.
And that's terrifying.
It's I understand it. Like, that's the whole thing is I feel good. I used to feel bad back in the day. Like, how could you like that whatever?
Yeah. And
now I feel actually okay when something comes out and people enjoy it. I'm like, at least.
Yeah. I was talking to Larry.
Somebody really, really
I was talking
it.
To Larry about this just this morning about, you know, his special.
Mm-hmm.
That came out.
Yeah.
And my album that came out and maybe being a little disappointed with the reach or maybe being a little disappointed with, you know, this was a pretty cool milestone, but you know, I thought it would do a little like, I didn't dare to dream this, that or whatever, but you kind of, you thought it would do a little bit better than it did or, you know, it would lead to something else, or, you know, that maybe you'd get like a really cool review, or maybe it would lead to, you know, some new fans, or, you know, somebody reaching out to you online. And it just wasn't the situation, I think, for either one of us, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
But as we were talking about it, and this is where I put like the rose tinted glasses on, it was like, are you happy with what you put out? And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, then maybe that's all that miracle needed to be.
Yeah.
You know, the circumstances with which, you know, he was going through, and then for the special to be made, the favors that you call in, and the people that you meet, the fact that you know somebody who can do this or can do that, the fact that people were chipping in to help, the people that want to donate time or they want to donate whatever.
Absolutely.
The fact that everybody was able to come together, it's like, forget about sales for a second. And how about just like, isn't it cool that a small team of people decided that you were important enough to put something out there together?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's loser speak, you know, for, right,
yeah, you know, we'll see that. And that's one thing that, as just a creative person, we've been doing comedy for years and writing and producing things. Is, I think ever since we started doing comedy, our idea as Comedia Go-Go was, as long as it makes us laugh,
right,
we're going to go out there and do it.
Right.
And to hell with them. If we like it, as long as we're okay with it. And I don't think I've never, fame and fortune is something that I've never been interested in. I want that. The fact that when I watch what I've done or I listen to what I've done and go, that was good. That was good. I like that. And that to me is the payoff, is like, we made something cool. We made something good. Like I always said, if I ever won like $1 billion, I'd put it all towards the movie that I want to make, like a crazy big budget, awesome movie that who knows if anybody would see it, but I'd be able to sit down and watch it and be like, oh my God, this movie is perfect because it's for me, you know? And I think luckily a lot of stuff we've done, and oh my God, we've done plenty of crap.
Yeah.
But the big things that we've put our heart, soul and stuff into has come out to where I'm like, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
If you can stand by it.
Yeah.
You can't control what people like.
Exactly.
You can't control what takes off or goes viral or, you know, whatever.
God. Oh yeah.
But if something does go viral,
yeah,
you'd like it to be for the right reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'd like it to be because it's something that you're proud of.
Yeah.
And if somebody is going to associate a certain project with your name, then it may as well be something that you would like to, like, even if you didn't produce the thing, if you watched it, like that's been my go-to for stand-up as well. It's like, if I were in the audience, would I be entertained by what that person is saying on stage?
I think that's the beauty of stand-up comedy, is that it's that instant gratification of like, this joke worked, this hit, this is, it's awesome. I think that's what's really cool about, that's why I still love doing live stuff to this day, is that idea of when we do live sketches or if it's just even stand-up, but I love the live sketches, is because it's that idea of, we all think this is funny. Let's see what a big group of strangers thinks. And when they all laugh, you're like, oh my God, you think, like, you agree with me?
I have to wonder what's in the head of somebody who gets up on stage and doesn't believe anything that they say. I have to wonder whether they're getting zero laughs, but they're like, this is what I wrote, and so this is what I'm going to do, and fuck the audience if they don't like any of it. Or the opposite side of that, of the spectrum, where they don't like anything that they're saying, but this audience, for whatever reason, is eating it up.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know how you can keep going either way.
Yeah.
So there has to be somewhere in between.
Yeah.
There has to be somewhere in between where, isn't it awesome when I'm coming up with something that I don't even fully understand yet, and I'm discovering it on stage with an audience who's willing to play along.
Yeah, that's,
those are the moments that I live for.
Yeah, I guess just also thinking about it, this is why it's so scary with the film stuff, but why I also love entering into the
festivals and stuff,
is because it's so weird with a film. You never know, and I guess most big budget films, they can focus group stuff, and you can show it to some audiences. So you can
They end up chiseling it to get to
trying
where.
To get into suicide.
And with us, it's like exactly. And with us, it's like we're our own focus group. But being able to go into the film festivals and sit down and have people watch it, and then hear their reactions, and then afterwards hear their feedback, is so great. I think that's, to me, to me, that's I love the film festival.
That was like a highlight. That was definitely like a highlight of 2016 for sure.
Purely for that reason is I know we're not going to blow up or it's not going to, you know, it's not going to turn into something huge, but just knowing that, okay, it worked. This is what, knowing that, like just knowing that is such a nice feeling.
Yeah. So as we all know, maybe this is your first time, maybe this is your second time or 100th time or whatever listening to Public Access, but maybe you didn't know, but Public Access is an educational program, an educational program that we always ask at the very end of every episode of Public Access. What did you come to know? What piece of knowledge did you take away from all the ramblings? And Regan, what did you come to know?
I came to know, and it's not that it's because you left the movie. Like, I came to know that there is a thing that people have left movies because of fear. That's an interest. I want to actually ask that as a podcast question, is if anybody else remembers leaving a movie because they were so afraid, because I think that's such a cool dynamic. Because at first I was like, oh, you paid. To me, I'm like, well, you paid money to be there. You're going to watch it. But as a kid or something, like being so scared, like how cool is... I guess not how cool is that, but you know, if it's supposed to be, that's an interesting moment of like, it was so scary you had to leave.
When we went on a double date years ago, I think we were married at the time, and there was a scene that was a little too violent. It was sexual, but it was too violent, and it wasn't like full on rape or anything like that, but certainly wasn't expected. And it was the friends who were with us actually turned and said, we need to go.
Yeah.
And I was like, who leaves a theater? Like, I remember having that exact moment. And I was like, well, I mean, just people have different thresholds.
Yeah.
And the scene was over immediately, but it was just like, who pays for a ticket? And then I got it.
Right. And you I'm sure it's the idea of also, like, you didn't know what you're getting into, or like, you didn't know what the movie was.
Yeah. Right.
So I don't know. I'm just, I came to know that that's a thing. Like being so scared that you've got to leave the movie, or, you know, who knows? But I want to maybe ask that question later.
That's a very good one. What I came to know is that there is a giant every day, daily, that the parks of Disney that are open, there is a giant percentage of the park attendees that just turn into 12-year-old Mexicans and address the many wonderful characters in the Disney rainbow as, just as we've many times said before, as... the name of
Toy Story.
Hey,
there's Beauty and the Beast.
Hey, Little Mermaid, come take a picture with me. Yeah. Not Princess Ariel, Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
And
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, but it's Belle.
But I was going to say, it's Belle, all right? It's not the Beast. What do they call?
Wait, but the Beast, his name is the Beast, or he has a, is the Beast have a real name?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sure he does, Beast, right? But they're going to call Belle Beauty and the Beast. Take a picture with the Beast. Hey, Peter Pan. But it's Tinkerbell. It's like straight up all the characters of Peter Pan, with the exception of Peter Pan, are called Peter Pan. Captain Hook. Hey, Peter Pan, take a picture of you.
Hey, Captain Hook.
Oh, I should actually go, hey, Prince of the Caribbean, take a picture of you. But it's Captain Hook.
Jack Sparrow. Hey, Jack Sparrow.
Hey, Jack Sparrow. They call the ride. I want to get on Jack Sparrow. Oh, do you see Pirates of the Caribbean? They get Jack Sparrow because Pirates of the Caribbean has been changed. Jack Sparrow has been inserted into the ride. So that's how it's like. They ride Jack Sparrow so they can see Pirates of the Caribbean at the end. That's what I came to know.
Yeah. Chippendales.
Hey, Chippendales.
Chippendales.
Stop messing with that duck.
And Tailspin.
Tailspin, he was in Jungle Book.
he was in
Robin Hood.
That's hardcore.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
But Sheriff, that's the poor box.
That was my favorite movie.
Now I know why your mom named you Nutsy.
Well, picture, like, real quick, picture a kid with the Chili Bowl haircut walking around in a Southwest Side middle school where it's just first exposure to this, walking around going, dip, because singing the song from Robin Hood, like walking around because that was the song in your head.
Robin Hood, little John walking through the forest, drum jump, blah, dee, dee, dee,
But the dynamic of that dumb, dopey Mexican kid walking around singing that song in Poe Middle School, it happened once, but...
It's a true life.
As a true life story. I just, oh, God. That's funny. Aaron, what did you come to know?
I did not know that there were adverse effects to eating human flesh.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
did not know that cannibalism... Like, I thought that you gained the strength...
Of your enemies, the power.
I didn't realize that it could lead to rash.
If not cooked properly.
I think that's the key thing. If you eat it raw, that's where the rashes come in. But if you cook, that's where you get the powers.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was
really, because I thought that if you had like a beating heart that you ripped out of someone's chest, you don't cook that. You just eat that.
You gotta cook the heart. They don't show you. The movies will tell you that they don't. But yeah, if you're really trying to, I don't know.
We talked a lot more about like real life apocalypse stuff and like cannibalism than I really was prepared.
Yeah,
to talk about.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. It's about being prepared.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all about prepping.
That's about having.
Hey, Lion King, be prepared.
Oh, that's Lion King. Be prepared. That, yeah, that's it.
Awesome.
But he's talking to Pumbaa, the whatever. It's not even the lion. They call it the fucking warthog Lion King.
Hey, Lion King farting.
Timon and Pumbaa.
Timon and Pumbaa.
Hey, Lion King.
Be prepared.
Oh, God. that's on another level.
They call Lightning McQueen cars in the movie Lightning McQueen.
Yeah.
And Ratatouille's just Ratatouille. Yeah. Like they're never gonna they are never gonna call that rat by its name. That rat's name is Ratatouille.
Right? Yeah.
Hardcore. It's Ratatouille. That's a universal kid thing. I think that is not a race thing. I think all kids call that rat Ratatouille. Anyways,
we got anything going on, Jess?
Yeah, guys, thank you so much for listening to Public Access. It has been way too long since we've been back on board, and we're happy to be back into the swing of things. We hopefully to get a nice slew of episodes coming your way. And a huge thanks to oneofus.net for continuing to carry your show and show the audience. And we super appreciate that. Coming this year, we're hoping to have Larry back on board pretty soon on a regular basis. But in the meantime, to kind of hold the fort, there's a small potential we might have an actual other podcast involving movies and more news to come. But that's just the teaser. So we might have a movie-based podcast coming soon. That'll be a nice little extra addition to Public Access. So you'll be hearing about that. On the other big thing, please, if you haven't already, please look into Larry's comedy special, Big Mama God and the Hazel-Eyed Monster, is available on comediaagogo.com. The link will be below in the oneofus.net page. Just please check it out. It's a great deal. There's a deal that if you're new to the whole Comedia Gogo experience, you can get the Larry Garza comedy special, you can get Larry Regan's comedy special, and Blood Cousins all in one package. And I promise you, it's so much stuff you can get. It's really cool. Support artists. Support our work. It's we put a lot of stuff of work into this. Really think you'll enjoy it. So if you like the show, you'll definitely like the comedy special. You'll like our movie. So please, comediagogo.com has all that kind of cool stuff. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to all our happy campers who constantly answer the questions on our Facebook page. Thanks for sticking with us. And we're back in the swing of things. So thank you.
Aaron, you got stuff going
go
on?
Go get Larry's special. Go get it. I'm going to get all that stuff that you just said. And I'm not saying that just because I'm sitting here, but I didn't realize that all of that came in the same package. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's nice.
You might recognize my voice as the announcer, and I was so happy to do that.
Yes.
My own album is out on iTunes now. I think it's streaming some places, but iTunes, Apple,
Amazon,
Google Play. It's called In Spite Of. I'm proud of it.
I listened to it. It
doesn't sound like garbage. There's some funny stuff on there. A second album has already been recorded and will hopefully be released within the year.
Ooh,
yes. And if you came out to the show tonight, that's like all new stuff from just the last year or so. Yeah. And so I hope to be recording that,
awesome.
Coming up soon.
So yeah, you can find that out. I mean, just go to iTunes and look up In Spite Of or look up comedy. Aaron Arianpour, if you want to go to my website, Aaron Comedian, A-A-R-O-N, comedian.com. There's all the links to all that stuff there. I appreciate you very much for, is this like maybe the fourth time, fifth time
I've done the show with you guys?
But you guys have been so good to me, and I appreciate it. And I may have said it before, and I don't mean to be so like mushy about it, but you know, I've had very complicated feelings about going on the road, and very complicated feelings about working San Antonio specifically. And you guys have always been like a bright spot. You guys have always been like a good reason to come. You know, a good reason to hang out, and a good reason to meet with other people that you really, really like, that you like hanging out with, that you really, really respect. So it's been a treat for me, so thank you.
Yeah, well, it's a treat for us. Ditto here. Yeah, we love having you. Anytime you're in town, we want to make sure that you're on the show. So
yeah.
Absolutely. So
I want to backtrack. I love coming to San Antonio. Every time I come here, you should come to my shows.
Yeah, yes,
but I'm just saying. You know what I mean.
Oh, we know.
Oh, we know. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. So, Aaron, once again, thanks for coming on board. And this is Jess.
This is Regan.
And we'll raw you later.
Yeah.
Radar.